kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm alive.
And wow, you were a lot more chipper today. You're like, hi.
It was such a forced chipper, though. I just want to go lay on the couch and cover up with a blanket and just exist. I'm doing my best out here.
Well, your best is not good enough.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. I don't want to.
That fits the effort level of this show. Anyway, you have to be attentive today. You have to pay attention because we're being joined by a guest.
Are we?
That's exciting. Yes, Scott Swarbrick of Milky Tea Studio. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Also pretty tired. Maybe not so much as Cole, but yeah, I'm good.
You wish you were curled up on a couch with a blanket taking
There's
a
never
nap.
A time when I don't. It's always a good thing to do.
All right, so you're on here to talk about blankets. What is your favorite blanket? Do you have a favorite blanket?
It's got to be pretty soft, right? It's got to be like a little bit fleecy, a little bit like a flannel.
Nice and warm.
Yeah.
I am currently snuggled up with my buffalo plaid Sherpa blanket. It's black and white. It's very comfy and cozy because it's also fucking cold in redneck land today. No, sir, I don't like it. But we're not actually here to talk about blankets.
Wait, what?
We're not. Joseph's bad at being a host. We're about a game.
Well, Cole, why don't you tell us what game we're here to talk about?
Hyper Brawl Tournament.
Yay, Hyper Brawl Tournament. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is Hyper Brawl Tournament?
So it's an arena-based sports game. So it's 2v2, two teams. There's a ball, two goals, and you simply got to outscore your opponent. But what we've done is kind of mix American football, basketball, soccer, and just kind of go crazy with it. Just remove all the rules, give everyone weapons. Everyone is kind of a little bit of a kind of superhero type character. So it gets pretty chaotic. But there's a little bit of sports there, but also a hell of a lot of action as well.
Sports ball, which Cole, I know you love.
Yeah, I'm the world's biggest sports ball fan. Did I sell it? I sold it, didn't I?
You did. That was really well done. Good effort. I believe you. But Cole, even not being a sports fan, you had a lot of fun with this game, right?
I really did. So long as I was dunking on the bots and the bots weren't dunking on me, then I was like, fuck yeah, this is great. The moment that the bots just decided to, like, rub their balls in my face, figuratively and literally, then things went a little sideways. They'll trap you in the corner. And then they hit you with a hammer.
You are a wordsmith.
Hit them right back.
You can if they don't knock you out, which I always got knocked out. But yeah, it's not just, you know, sports, because there is the combat element to it involved as well. And how do you decide that you're going to just go, here's all the sports at once, and also you can beat each other with a hammer?
So It kind of started, we do a lot of game jams in the studio just to generate new ideas and build some prototypes. And it's usually just a piece of paper with maybe a genre or some sort of inspiration on, and we just go from there. So this specific one that we had was just to make a sports game. So half of us were kind of like, oh, great, we can make a sports game. The other half were like, oh, no, I hate sports.
So, oh, they were a whole team of coals on you.
Exactly. So there was a little bit of back and forth, a few little arguments of kind of how we could approach it. But that sort of combination, really, of the love and hatred of sports at the same time has kind of made it what it is. So we wanted to make a sports game that people who don't like sports can enjoy, really. So it's got a lot of the typical kind of trappings of a sports game with the ball, the goals, it's team-based, but we kind of throw that out the window as well and just give everyone weapons and let everyone knock each other out and things. So that was like our main goal throughout, really, was have something that both people who enjoy sports can kind of take on, but also people who don't really like sports too much can have some fun with it as well.
The people who refer to it as sports ball can,
exactly.
can enjoy some sports ball.
I think
ball.
I said that word like 12 times during my review because I was like, it's sports ball.
So tell us about some of the different characters that are in the game.
So one of the big things that we started with was kind of making characters that felt like they were out of sort of an 80s or 90s cartoon that you'd see on a Saturday morning or something. So we just took loads of inspiration from different sort of bits of pop culture and films and games and things we enjoy and just made these like crazy characters that come from all over the universe, essentially. And then in a sort of game sense, each character is quite unique. So we've got three different classes, which is kind of a light, medium, and heavy. So your lighter characters are faster, but a little bit weaker. Your heavier characters are stronger, but a bit slower. So we split them up into those categories, but each character themselves is quite unique as well. So for example, if we've got three light characters, they all play a little bit differently. They have unique stats and stuff. So you're able to pick two characters for your team. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into mixing that up. So you could pick a light guy and a heavy guy, or, you know, you could pick two medium people and it kind of mixes up from there. So that's a lot of the cool stuff that we're seeing at the moment from people that are getting into the game is how people are setting up these different characters and what strategy they're going for. You know, we see some people who just pick two heavy characters and just want to knock everyone out. That's totally fine. That works.
Guilty.
Or you could pick, you know, two light characters and just try and run past everyone and avoid all damage. Both work pretty well.
I liked beating people up.
Yeah, it's funny actually because we've got some leaderboards in the game. And from that, you can kind of see how people are playing. And it's always great when you come across someone who's like really high up in the leaderboards for knockouts, but then the goals is like really low down. So they obviously just jump in and just beat everyone up.
Yeah, that sounds like my strategy until I get beat up myself, which
See,
usually
I always
happens.
I always play as the female characters who are smaller and have less health. And so I have to avoid getting smashed into the ground. And then I have to find other ways around the arena, which requires me to like dodge shit. And so like I'll be running across the arena with the ball and there's a big giant minotaur coming to smash me. And it's terrifying. This was an accidental horror game.
That wasn't intentional, but okay. I'll take that.
Cole, I know during the review you mentioned that all the female characters were all light characters. I'm looking at the character list. Rune is actually a tank hero female.
Is it?
Yep.
Yeah, so she's
unlockable. Wow, I must have missed that one.
She's maybe level 25, I think you unlock her at. So there is other characters as you progress a bit further into the game. So Rune, for example, is really cool because she's just like a big, heavy class with loads of armor and stuff. So she's one of my go-to characters usually. She's pretty good.
I very much so request that heavier female characters not be locked so far away. Because I'm taking an ass.
More characters, so. We'll see.
This is going to turn into a show where we make all these awful suggestions that a developer takes and changes their game. Like Carnage is telling me, the devs for Nexoria just added another 1,000 achievement points to the game and made it a whole lot easier based on Chivo guides getting in touch with them.
Wait, so they're actually making it easier?
Yes.
All devs should do that. I like easy. I am curious about one thing. Does it have anything to do with achievements or making the game easier? But it has something to do with the online. There's no cross-platform play, correct?
Not currently, no.
Any plans for that?
It is something we've been looking into, yeah. It's obviously something that a lot of multiplayer games are doing now. Back when we first started developing the game, it was kind of before a lot of that stuff took off, really. So it is something we've been looking into the past year or so. So there's certainly potential for it. You know, if it's something that a lot of people in the community want, then we're much more likely to do it. Because the game is out on, it's on PC, on Steam, Xbox One, PS4, Switch. And a lot of people obviously have friends that have different platforms. And we've already had a bunch of people that have said, oh, can I play with my friend on Xbox when I'm playing on PC? So yeah, it's a possibility for sure. It's something that I personally quite like to get into the game.
And it would be good to see. I love the games that are adding in crossplay and giving everyone an opportunity to play together. Plus, it helps with the general player base.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the good thing is with our game, it doesn't really matter which platform you play on. It should be quite an even playing field. So obviously with a lot of, say, like FPS games, naturally the PC players might be a little bit better just because of those reaction times with a mouse and stuff like that. But I think with our game, it's kind of fair to begin with. So there's no reason why, from a game design sense, why you can't play with another person on a different platform.
Makes sense. Cole, did you have a follow-up to that?
Fuck no, I'm not good enough at this interview shit to have follow-ups. I just had the one question. It popped into my head.
Bold statement about
I think it's a good idea. I think it's kind of just goes without saying that cross-platform is an ideal situation. But I also understand that it's rare for, you know, indie games to even have online multiplayer, let alone cross-play.
Yeah.
So the fact that you guys stepped into that and weren't just like, well, it's couch co-op, deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Is respectable, because I understand it's not easy.
Yeah, it's been a tiring process making an online multiplayer game. Because originally when we started and we had the prototype, for the first 6 months or so, it was just purely a local co-op game, you know, where people could play together, multiplayer on a couch or something. And that was something that we always wanted to focus on, because we all played and enjoyed those games, and I don't think there's enough of them now. But then naturally it just kind of got to the point where we're like, okay, this should be online as well, just to get the most out of it. And it was worth all the effort for sure, but it was so difficult.
Was the online play in the works before the pandemic started, or did that affect development of the game?
Not really, no. We were kind of done with it, to be honest, by the time the pandemic came. I think we still had some content to finish off and things to polish up. But the whole kind of scope of the game and what was included was done probably about a year ago now, I think.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we did self-publish the game as well. So a lot of the work the past few months has just been on the publishing side of things as well.
What are the challenges that you face when you self-publish a game?
Everything. It's been a great learning process. Like, it's genuinely been interesting to do. But it kind of gets to the point where, as a developer, it's like the boring end of making a game. Because you spend a long time, obviously, making all these cool levels and putting these interesting mechanics together and, you know, piecing it all up. And then you get to the point where you're publishing it and it's kind of just loads of spreadsheets and ticking boxes and you don't really know what they mean and things. So, yeah, we did all the four platforms that it's out on at the same time as well. So publishing has been crazy. And each platform has a different approach to publishing and a different sort of way of communicating things. So you've kind of got to learn everything four times over.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's been really rewarding at the same time to do it that way, because it's given us a lot of insight into things that we wouldn't otherwise know. So it was well worth doing, I think.
And hopefully it pays off being on all four platforms.
Since we're talking all the boring stuff with spreadsheets and things like that, there seems to be a pretty vocal community on Steam, on the forums there, who felt like the game should have been free to play. How do you decide whether or not you're going to release an online game like this and decide whether it's going to be free to play or a premium product?
It was quite a difficult decision, obviously, because naturally with free to play, you're going to get a lot more users on board straight away, because it's, you know, it's way easier to just install the game than pull the money out of your pocket and buy the game. But we didn't want to make a game that could potentially be pay to win. So that instantly sort of ruled out was making something that was free to play and people like bought characters and weapons and things. So then on the other end of the spectrum, you can then start making the cosmetics paid and all the characters and everything gameplay related is free. But just as a small team, that I think would have been really difficult to do in making a stream of cosmetics that are, you know, there's enough of them to kind of make it worth it being a free-to-play game. So for us personally, having a game that is like a, you know, you pay to play it, just that one-time purchase it helps support us a lot more, I think. And with it being that focus, we can kind of carry on making updates for the game, carry on adding content. Whereas with free-to-play, it would have been really risky, I think. And it's hard to compete with a lot of the free-to-play games as well, because you've got these huge games like Fortnite and things like that, which, you know, they've got vastly different budgets and teams. So I think having it pay to play was the best route for us, just to continue supporting it.
And it is nice to buy a game and have all the content there instead of being piecemealed cosmetics and costumes for the next few weeks.
Yeah, for sure.
So I appreciate what you did.
Yeah, it was a difficult decision, and I think it could have worked either way. You know, I'm not saying one route is wrong and the other one's right, but just for us as a team, there was less risk, plus it allows us to keep developing the game for longer with the decisions we've made.
That's reasonable. Nope, I'm mad about it. Should have been free.
Call with her. I
caught off guard with that one, didn't I? I mean, there's always, if you don't want to be free, you could be free with Game Pass. We have to. I have to do it at least once. Somebody has to bring up Game Pass. We've been going a while. It hadn't happened.
It does lead to a good question. A few months ago, a game came out called Swim Sanity that launched to fairly little fanfare, despite being a really solid game. And we're seeing it join Xbox Games with Gold for November. And I'm curious to know if possible to see a similar situation where Hyper Brawl comes out, and after a few months, maybe we see it hit Games with Gold or PlayStation Plus or even Game Pass. Is that something that's in the realm of possibility?
I think so. And just personally speaking, I would like to see that happen. Because again, it allows a lot of people to jump into the game and try it out. Because for us, it is quite difficult to market with the team size we've got. So it being on one of these platforms like Game Pass or PS Plus, it allows so many more people to see the game and try it out. So it's something that I think would be really, really cool. And I think, especially with Game Pass, Xbox are doing such a good job with that. And that's speaking as someone who's not got an Xbox and is quite bitter now that all these cool games are on Game Pass. So it'd be really nice, I think.
I'd say, hey, go get an Xbox, but you guys are going into lockdown over there, aren't you?
Yeah, we are, as of Wednesday or Thursday, I think.
And
I got my PS5 pre-order, though, so that should keep me busy.
What do you think's going to happen with that situation? Like, I've seen a lot of people on different subreddits, like, are we still going to get our consoles?
So there was a game in the UK, which is, I guess, our main sort of retailer for video games. So they said this morning, I think, that anyone who's already pre-ordered and anyone that pre-orders in the next few days, they will be able to come into, or, well, wait outside the store, I suppose, at a certain time on release day, and they'll just sort of bring them out and still be able to give people them.
That's good, at least.
Yeah. I know some people were saying that Best Buy here in the U.S. was doing appointments to pick up your console. You had to set up an appointment time to come into the store and get it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
From what I hear, Best Buy isn't even doing any in-store consoles. Like, for pickup, it's only, like, the in-store pre-orders.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, I know one person who pre-ordered through Best Buy, and they were like, you can come in and make an appointment, or you can make an appointment to come in and pick up your pre-order at that time.
Yeah.
And that was it. You can't just, like, you know, no mad rush at the store. Which has me a little concerned, because my plans were send my husband to just go pick one up.
Well, call Walmart. I don't know what Walmart's doing. I might end up camping at a Walmart on the 12th for a PS5. I got my Xbox locked down. I just don't have a PlayStation set up yet. So
I mean, yeah, it's not the end of the world. My 1S still chugs along fine, but but it needs retired for sure.
No, it just needs a new home. Don't retire it for good. Give it a new home. Look, Scott's over here. He's talking about wanting to play Game Pass. You could just ship it across the ocean.
Ship it across the pond.
Yeah, that's totally cool with me.
It does play, and it does play Game Pass.
That's all I need.
Something tells me the shipping for a 1S across the ocean would be more expensive than just going and buying a 1S.
Yeah, that's true.
Possibly.
You can pretty much get them for like $100 these days.
You'd be surprised. They're getting more expensive because of the whole pandemic thing going on.
Really?
Yeah. Game consoles are in short supply.
Ew. No, because well, now that you mention it, there's not as many of them that show up on Facebook Marketplace now.
Yeah, and the prices are getting higher.
There was somebody the other day who had a PlayStation, an Xbox, and a Nintendo Switch, and a DS, and a Vita, and games for all of them, and all the accessories, and a monitor, too, and was selling it all as one big-ass bundle, and I was like, what? Wow. Do you just buy all that and you're a hardcore gamer, and then one day you just wake up and go, nah,
I'm done.
Not anymore. I played them all. And then that's that? Like, how do you How do you just go, let's sell them all at once?
I'm going to jail. Time to unload everything.
See, well, around here, that's not that unlikely.
There you go. I found your answer.
Either they're going to jail or they need some meth and they're going to end up in jail eventually. It's one or the other. Rednecks.
Hey, would you guys like to add our meth heads up here too? So, yeah, methed out redneck, new character for Hyper Brawl Tournament. Like scratches his face constantly.
His power up is the tweak, and he just like starts running around frantically, flailing his arms and hits whatever. I'm sorry.
AI controlled, and he runs around like you can't do anything to control him. He just attacks everybody and then scores a goal.
You push right, he jumps. That was not one of our better ideas. It's a funny idea, but not one of our better game ideas.
I'm quite into it. I'm going to note it down. Pitch it for the team tomorrow.
We've heard that before.
I'm telling you guys, he's methed out. He's going crazy. They were telling me on this show it sounded really interesting.
Little blue crystals start popping out as he's spinning around the toilet. We got the aesthetics worked out and everything.
I like it. I'm sold.
God, we're horrible people. We're sorry we did this to you today. I'm sorry. Joe's probably not. Joe has no shame.
Zero. Zero shame. I'm loving this. This is... So, Scott, how's the reception been on the game so far? It's been out for how long now?
So it's almost 2 weeks, I think. I've completely lost track of days because it's been crazy. So it'll be 2 weeks on Tuesday. So it's been really good. It's been pretty overwhelming. Just with us launching on so many platforms at once and things like that. It's been quite crazy. And we've seen some really, really nice responses. We've got our own little Discord community, so there's been a lot of people in that are now starting to sort of make little tournaments and kind of discuss tactics and the best weapons to use and all that cool stuff. And we've had some really nice streams and YouTube videos go up. So that's been really good to see. Personally, for me, seeing someone enjoying the game that you've made is just, like, the most rewarding thing. So that's been really great. I couldn't really ask for anything else. We've had a lot of people give us a lot of feedback as well, both positive and negative, but it's all good because, you know, we take it all into consideration. We discuss everything, and we are going to continue supporting the game as well. So any sort of feedback we get is really, really helpful. Maybe not so much if it's about putting rednecks in the game.
That was a fine idea, and you know it.
We'll see how it turns out when I mention it in the meeting tomorrow.
And it's not just any redneck. It's a methed out redneck.
The meth is important.
Yeah, you can't forget the meth.
Maybe that can be his weapon.
He just throws a cloud of crystal dust in their face.
We did used to have a weapon, actually, which we just called it the reverse grenade. So you'd throw it at someone and it would release this gas. And anyone that stepped in it, it would reverse your controls. So, like, backwards would be forwards and A would be B and all that stuff.
Oh, that's mean.
And it was kind of cool at first, but it just became a little bit frustrating. We'd have people testing it, and they'd walk into this gas, and then, like, they'd turn the controller upside down all of a sudden to try and, like, counteract it. it didn't last too long. We ended up taking that one out. But, you know, that maybe could be used as the foundation for this character.
So now you've got me curious. What is your ultimate team?
In the game right now?
Yes.
So I think it's probably Shade, he's like a medium sort of class character, but on the faster end of that. So I usually use him with the grapple hook, because that is just a cool weapon, just being able to like grab someone from the other side of the arena and take them out. And then my other character is usually Rune, with the mag beam. So I don't know if anyone's used the mag beam yet, but that thing is just ridiculous. Like, a lot of the time there's not too much advantage in using it, but it's just kind of worth it, because it's crazy. So that is essentially, when you use it, it'll pull the ball towards you. So for example, if someone's just thrown it really hard, you can just use the mag beam and sort of whip it back. But then it carries on like the physics of the throw from before. So sometimes it ends up just ricocheting everywhere and going crazy. but it's just cool. It's fun to use, and it's fun to see some of the stuff you can do with it. So yeah, that's usually my team, Shade and Rune.
I have to unlock Rune.
Yeah, Rune's good. Rune's a fun one. She's got some really cool skins as well. That's probably personally why I like playing as Rune the most, just for some of the skins you can unlock.
So you mentioned whipping balls around and the physics in this game. I absolutely love throwing a ball and knocking someone out. Like, nothing makes me happier to just knock someone the fuck out just by throwing the ball at them. And even better, yep, when it trickles into the goal afterwards.
Yeah, when you can put someone into the net along with the ball, that's one of the most satisfying things. That's probably one of the oldest mechanics we've got in the game. That was something that, like, from day one, we had two characters and a ball. And it looked a little bit more like Pong back then. Like, it was just bouncing the ball back and forth. But then within a week or so, we allowed people to grab the ball and then power up a shot. And then we kind of have those times where it would hit the other character. And we're just like, why can we not just let this knock people out as well? So we put that behavior in, it just worked. And it is truly satisfying, especially if you're playing it multiplayer. Like, if you're in the same room as someone or something, you can just knock them out and see the reaction. It's pretty fun. And we've also got friendly fire as well, which was something that we added in. We had discussions. We were like, is it really a good thing to kill your teammates? And we all were just like, yeah, it is. because it adds to the tension of using weapons properly and being quite focused on not accidentally knocking them out. But then sometimes if they're just annoying you, you can do it on purpose. And like, why not?
Yeah, I have knocked my teammate out so many times because there'll be a group of people going after the ball, and I just start punching everything, and of course my teammate gets right in my way. So I have, you know, what are you going to do? You got to knock him the fuck out.
Yeah, it happens, right? For better or for worse.
Yeah. Cole, what do you think about the AI?
When they're on the other team, they're cheating bastards.
So now you sound like you enjoy sports, because that's the kind of thing that you say.
I definitely don't enjoy sports. But no, like, I would have times where I'd be up like 5 points, and then these motherfuckers would come back and get 7 or 8. And I'm just standing there watching it happen, and I'm like, oh, I am bad at sports balls.
If you were going to pick your favorite sport, what would it be?
Rocket League.
All right. A real life sport.
Oh, humans play. Shit.
Is that a hard Kentucky question?
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't particularly care for any of them. I'm from Kentucky, so I'm like contractually obligated to say that I like basketball. But I could sit and watch a whole game. And I have kids who play sports. My kids love sports. My oldest was like in soccer, and my the both of the older two were in basketball, and I just watched a full on game, and I'm like, uh-huh. So you moved down there now? Oh, okay. Oh, but now you're back over here. Oh. Oh, Why are we still in this match? You know? So it was, you know, I don't have any actual attraction to sports whatsoever. It's really hard for me to get it.
I like my football. My Steelers are playing today. They're playing the Ravens. That's going to be a bloodbath, but I can't wait for that match.
Yes. Yeah. Even when you start like listing off teams, for me, it's might as well be in Chinese. I'm just like, you know, the meme of like the chick staring kind of confused with the numbers and the algebraic equations going all over her face. That's me the moment a ball comes into the scene. I'm like, why are we doing this? I'm sorry.
Oh, my Lord. So, Scott, what are you playing when you're not working on any games, when you're not busy? What games are you sitting down and enjoying right now?
There's always too many at once. I'm one of these people that ends up just filling the backlog up with games and never actually finishing them.
Oh, we know how that feels.
So, yeah, it's one of those things. You get halfway through the game and then something else comes out or goes on sale, and you're like, oh, new game, and then start playing that.
You get to actually get halfway through a game?
That's a rare occasion.
People start the game?
Yeah, it's difficult. So I got Hades on Friday, actually, so I'm still really early into it, but that game is so good. I am really, really liking that game.
I've heard so much good about that one.
Uh-huh. I've yet to pick it up.
No, it's not on Xbox. So.
Oh, it's so good.
I play on PC, but I still just haven't picked it up yet.
Yeah.
I splurged a whole $3 and got the Left 4 Dead bundle this week. So that was my game budget for the week.
That's a bargain, though. Is that all of the games for $3?
Yeah, Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 on Steam for $2.98.
That's pretty good.
That is a bargain.
And I was like, well, that's mine. I've had them on Xbox forever because Xbox is my primary platform, but I was like, for that price, why not? And Left 4 Dead 2 just recently got a free update with new content.
No.
Oh, so they're still doing stuff with that game?
No, fans made it and they allowed it to be released.
All right, that's still cool though.
It was a really big deal that they, and so I haven't got to play that. And I was like, I need that in my life.
Yeah, that's a fun
but that's
game.
Only on PC.
No. So. Yay, modding scene.
Yeah. That is becoming more of a thing that's acceptable on consoles.
I wish it would happen more.
Yeah, not quite to the degree. I mean, everything that's on PC is modded immediately. It takes a little more effort to do it on consoles.
What kind of weird mods could we see in Hyper Brawl Tournament?
I guess we did kind of do our own. I don't know if I should say it, really, because it's obviously not in the game. But when we were testing things out, we just kind of started setting up essentially what would be like a custom game mode, where you could modify the ball and make different shapes. So you could have like a cube one or a pyramid shape one or a weird egg shape one. And then we did loads of stuff with the physics as well. So you could have like the world's most bouncy ball or the world's most deadly ball that just killed everything it touched.
Wow.
And then I think we did a bunch of stuff with characters as well. We kind of messed about with physics that, so, like, we could make the arenas basically like ice rinks where everyone was a little bit, like, slippery. And, well, it's like low gravity, big head mode to go of that. We did go kind of crazy with that stuff. So maybe that could see a comeback if that's something people would enjoy.
I was going to say, any thoughts of that stuff making it back into the game? Because I would love to dick around with stuff like that. I love modifiers and weird cool stuff like that. I'd playing with like an egg shaped ball would be amazing.
Yeah, it worked really well. It was cool. It was something that was a little bit out of the scope of what we could do at the time. But now that the game is kind of out there, you know, if that's something that people would like to see, then for sure it could be something we could work on again. Because we've got like your sort of competitive modes where everything's all like level playing field and everyone can get like really hardcore about it. But then sometimes you just want to go on the other end of the spectrum and just raise hell, do you know what I mean? And just do crazy stuff. So some people want to do that. So I'd quite like to bring that back in.
I don't know how well this would fly in today's day and age, but there was an old NES game called Super Dodgeball. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it. It was recently released on all the consoles as part of that Kunio-kun World Brawler Collection Bundle. But there was a modded version of that game that replaced the dodgeball with just a sprite of a baby. So you're throwing a baby around for dodgeball. And I thought it was funniest thing I've ever played in terms of like hacked ROMs. Just a cartoon baby with a giant smile on its face goes flying across the stage, smacking into people. So yeah, a baby shaped ball.
So in that, did that change the game mechanics in any way?
Not at all. It was literally just they swapped out the sprite.
Wow. That's crazy.
So simple. So simple. And it was beautiful.
That's awesome.
That explains a lot about you, Joe.
It does explain. Think how much more could be explained if you knew more about me.
Oh, dear. We're good. We're good.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything that you wanted to mention about Hyper Brawl that we didn't bring up because we're bad at our jobs?
I don't know. I'm thrown off now by crazy mods that could be possible. No, I don't think so. Obviously, if people want to check it out, it's on PC and consoles. It's on Xbox, PS4, and Switch. It is out now. It's been out about 2 weeks. If people have checked it out and they've got stuff to say, questions to ask, then we're always pretty responsive. We've got our Discord community, so you can come in and shout at us on that. Or obviously Twitter as well. So we are like super open to feedback, so it's always good to hear from people. But yeah, I think we've covered a lot of things. We've maybe not spoke about arenas, which is kind of the other... We've got our characters, weapons, and then arenas, and those are kind of the three things that make each game quite unique, because it can change up quite drastically.
Well, so what are some of the unique arenas that people can experience in the game?
So what we did was we kind of made them all a similar size, so they're all like the same length, and there's two goals in each one. But then we change up the shape of arenas, and also what happens in them. So there's different obstacles and different mechanics. So there's some arenas where like the floor opens up and you can fall down. There's some arenas which have like spinny walls, which change up the angles that you shoot from, and you can kind of pin people into certain areas based on what's moving around and where. So each arena plays in a really unique way that kind of challenges each player, and it's something else to kind of learn. So that, you know, each game is unique, really, based on those things.
Yeah, I love the environments that I played in the game. I have fallen down the hole in the one that opens up the floor way too many times to count.
Yeah, I think that's the only one that can kill the player at the moment as well. So that's the most dangerous arena based on that.
Yeah, I fall down a lot.
I just constantly ran into things and didn't realize it. Because there's so much going on that I would get sidetracked and be like, I'm not even sure which character I'm holding on to at the moment.
Yeah, it's pretty chaotic, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was a blast, though. Had a lot of fun with the game. Like you said, it is available now on Xbox, PlayStation, Switch, PC. Fingers crossed we'll see some crossplay in the future. So you mentioned on the show, obviously we have to hold you to that as a promise. That was guaranteed as happening on not setting up anything for you guys, right?
I'll wait for the pitchforks outside the window tomorrow.
Oh, man. Well, Scott, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, chatting with us. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with some more show in a little bit. One more time, tell us all about the game, where we could keep in touch with you, and give us some final words to wrap up the show.
So, yeah, so it's out now. You can go and buy it on PC and consoles. You can just go to hyperbrawl.com. And from there, you'll have links to store pages, links to our different community areas, like Twitter, Discord, Facebook, etc. And you can get in touch with us from there. So, yeah, and obviously, if anyone picks it up and checks it out, be sure to let us know what you think.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. It is election night, and it is a shit show. And because of that, we have a party cast going on. Cole's here. Tim's here. Chris is here. Purnell's here. How's everyone doing?
Terrible.
It's a shit show.
Terrible is the correct answer.
I'm sitting here in a pink robe with a hood up and a shirt that says Power to the Females. And, like, I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic, but I am very well prepared for shit to fall apart. And, like, if I need to cocoon myself with a blanket and be sad, I'm ready for that.
Do you want to know what's sad? This isn't the beginning of the show. So thanks to Scott at Milky Tea Studios for joining us. Son of a... It feels like that interview was, like, a week and a half ago, wasn't it?
Okay, we said that. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? October is over. We're done here.
Oh, we had Scott from Milky Tea on two goddamn days ago. And it's the beginning of this episode.
I have a pink robe now with a hoodie.
What's Purnell saying?
I was like, one, I guess that makes it talk timber now.
Don't encourage him.
I guess there was one positive from this crap show so far, so I'll take it what I can get, which is that our psycho candidate, we all expected her to lose, but thankfully is now fairly official. She got literally trounced. She got like maybe 15% of the total vote. Nice. So maybe she will now go back to the slums and drink bleach where she should be.
Or rent.
But like, yeah, that's like the one thing where I was like, if I can't bank on what America will do in other ways, but I can pretty much bank on my state sending that jerk to the cleaners. And it did. So I'll take that.
Woof. Yeah.
Nice. How's Texas looking, Chris?
It's light blue.
Light blue.
That's a good...
That's climate change for you.
Yeah. That's Crayola change for you.
Crayola.
Yeah.
It's been, I mean, it's been positive so far. The turnout for early voting in Texas actually surpassed the total amount of voting that happened here in 2016. And as they say, Texas is not a red state. It's a no voting state. So I think if enough people got off their butts or mailed in their stuff, then who knows? Texas is huge in the electoral college too. Yeah. 38 or something.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's big. I don't know.
So it's looking good so far, but we're not going to know for a while.
Yeah, everyone keeps saying and reminding that we probably won't really know tonight.
Yeah, no, we definitely.
Though the circumstance under which we would know tonight is if Biden won, because if Trump wins, it's going to be like barely, and Biden might also win barely, but. If they're able to call tonight, it's because he blew him the fuck out. And that would be lovely, but...
It would be lovely, I'm only going to stay up
so late.
Sadly, it's not looking likely. But then again, everything I'm seeing so far is like, I'm hearing people tell me now it's like 5% or something really minuscule. So
maybe I'd
let the cynicism get to me too much.
Because 538's forecast had their biggest spike was with Biden winning 400 or more electoral points.
Yeah. Well, and that's another positive, you know, the fact that he's leading at the moment is good because Republicans tend to vote on election day and they don't mess with mail-in, like, ballots and things like that. And so...
Yeah, all the mail-in stuff is going to be mostly Democrat, I would assume.
Yeah. So that's going to, like, even if he doesn't appear to be winning, like, within the next week or so, it could very well, like, shift still. You know, and the problem is I think the biggest thing is just somebody tell Joe, do not like, talk. You know, don't give up. Yeah.
Don't talk.
Don't
talk. Just shut your fucking mouth and let things happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah.
Like, don't hug anybody inappropriately either.
Well, God, we can't help that.
That still messes with me to this day. Like, I have such mixed feelings about that a lot of other people don't, because, like, I see the picture that people pass around a lot, and for a while, I was just like, whoa, that kid looks very uncomfortable with the scooching and the skeeching. But then one day, while coming back from the break room with my coffee, I saw a photo on the wall, and I recognized the girl in the picture. It is the girl in the photo with Joe Biden. I was like, oh, that's who that is. It's freaking Chris Coons' daughter. And then I'm like, okay, well, that should be an easy enough thing to either dispel or just get discussed. Like, how about just having Chris Coons respond to it, or having the kid respond to it? Because she's not a kid anymore. She's like in college. But no one's talking about it. But I wish one of them would, because they clearly are. Their families are friends. Like, just be like, look, I'm going to say this one time and then shut the fuck up. I was like a kid. This dude's being like happy grandpa, and I don't like it, but no kid likes happy grandpa, so get
on. I hated that as a kid.
I think it's one of those things that people use that snapshot, and like, there could be so many reasons why the kid is cringing. I have kids. My kids will come in for a hug, and then when I hug back, they're like, ah, what are you doing? And I'm like, you hugged me!
Big signals!
They don't give a fuck. They don't care.
And it's like, you know, and perspective in all things, of course, like a kid cringing at a hug is, it's a more palatable image than a kid starving to death in a cage.
Yeah.
So,
okay, I would rather be hugged inappropriately than starve in a cage, for sure.
Yeah, you know,
starving in a cage, grandpa. And then the starvee hugs you.
I mean, at least you're getting a hug out of it.
A hug doesn't nourish me, Joe.
It nourishes.
I think you just haven't had enough hugs, Brunel.
Yeah.
Touche.
Bring it in, buddy.
All I ever wanted was a hug. A nutrient-rich hug, possibly with some syrup.
With syrup? What?
Just hand me a bottle of syrup with the hug. I'm not going to say no.
Do you want the person, like, with their shirt off, covered in chocolate syrup, hugging you?
No, maples. I thought he wanted maple syrup.
Sick person, Joe. I was just
thinking good old corn.
Corn syrup.
Yeah, corn syrup.
Either way, it's going to go on some wet pancakes.
Only the wettest of pancakes.
Wet pancakes. Syrup,
funny, and he ain't here to make fun of it. I'm so sad. Syrup. Yeah, it's like old but sticky.
Syrup.
Sarp.
Swerp.
Tim, how are things up by you?
Well, they've already called our state for Biden, so you're welcome.
Sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, they had zero precincts reporting, but they got in that call.
They did that here, too.
Well, you know, everybody knows.
They closed at 6 at 6:01. They're like, Trump wins Kentucky. And I was like, wait.
People are claiming it's because of exit polls, but I feel like that's disingenuous. Like, that should not be the metric.
What? I mean, I follow Associated Press, does a little bit more leniency as far as to why they call certain areas, but even they were a little too on the ball for my liking. Because they were calling shit with 0 votes reported, 0% of precincts, just nothing. Literally the moment a poll closed, they were like, okay, well, yeah. All that was just for show.
It's like, all right, the polls didn't catch fire, so everything probably happened according to plan.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know, I find it a little problematic, but also, we knew Kentucky was going to go for Trump. Like, it was a big ass thing. We made a big deal. Explained to the kids, hey, y'all got to stay home because, you know, human malware, but we're going to go vote. And then my youngest is like, why have you guys surprised? It's like, I don't know. It might happen, but hopefully not. And, you know, we went and we voted and then we got out and we got back in the truck and, you know, my husband's like, I voted blue down ballot. And I was like, yep, me too. And we voted no on the two propositions because they're ass. And then, we looked at each other and we were like, this was just to make ourselves feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you gotta do sometimes. Kentucky,
it doesn't mean shit.
You just have to do your part. So, say like, well, we tried.
Yeah. We just did it to, at least we canceled out his brother's ballots or whatever we hope for, you know?
I think the thing that's shocking more though in regards to certain areas. Wait, Kentucky. I think it's Kentucky. It's Mitch McConnell's location, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The fact that he didn't get bonked, I guess, is the thing that really gets me. Okay,
so here's the thing. I knew damn good and well Mitch McConnell was going to win. Amy McGrath has lost both of her Senate bids at this point. She's all fine and dandy, but it's Kentucky. And they're just not going to get behind her. With Mitch McConnell, the whole thing, like I've been telling my sister, she's like, he needs to get out of there. I'm like, he's not. He's won 6 terms. This is going to be his 7th term.
Yeah, he's been in there for almost 40 years.
They need to limit that shit. This is
forever. He already looked like a goddamn zombie. If you didn't see the pictures of him recently with the bruised up hands and his busted up face, like he's already a zombie wandering around in the Congress. But the one thing that we have to hope for is that, you know, he just gets sent back to the minority because we knew that it was a lost cause to vote against him. We did it, but it's a lost cause, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like the other one that's here is Hal Rogers. He's in the House. You don't ever hear about him because there's 400 people in the House and only so many of them make the headlines. But Hal Rogers has been in the House for Kentucky since the 1970s.
Jesus
Christ.
Okay. He was in there before I was born. Okay. He is literally known in the House as the Prince of Pork.
I don't even know wow. What's pork. I forgot the term. That's what it is. I was like, wait a minute, what's that got to do with bacon?
Ham fists everything he can into every bill he can. And it's stupid. Like he absolutely and 90% of the time he runs unopposed. Mitch McConnell too. At least we had Amy McGrath to attempt to put in there this time because majority of the time Mitch McConnell's unopposed.
Can we just call him Bitch McConnell?
I fight it every day.
Dark Meek is saying, oh, Jesus Christ, we're talking politics. Unless this is good news, I don't want to hear it.
Well, I said my good news was that our bigot queen got beat to shit. So there you go. If it could happen in Delaware, maybe other states. Maybe other states, too.
The one thing that I am hopeful about is that there are some really important propositions on the ballot in Kentucky. Fucking Marcy's Law is here again. I swear to God, every time I vote, I have to vote against Marcy's Law. It's the biggest pain in the ass of my life.
None of us know what that is.
It's actually a thing that they're trying to get passed all over, but they just pick and choose random ass states. It's a constitutional amendment for your state that's basically like they try to put it to create a set of rights for victims, but ultimately it just like boils down to making it easier for you to figure out who's accusing you of shit. And being able to have their information and stuff. Like, most people have no idea what it pertains to. And I'd have to sit here and, like, get into all kinds of law shit.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
And I don't want to do that.
Absolutely not doing that.
Let me tell you, if Marcy's law comes up as a constitutional amendment in your state, the answer is fucking no. The other thing that they wanted to do was extend terms for judges. And I was like, nope.
we need term limits on the dickheads in there to begin with.
They wanted to take it from 6 to 8. And I was like, fuck you.
So what game news is going on? Please, pretty. It's Tuesday. There is no game news. What the Thursday show is for. Yeah. There's just reviews tonight.
And shooting the shit. And unfortunately, the shit tonight really stinks.
Yeah. So should we dive into reviews?
I guess we can.
Yes.
All right.
For the fallen. What game was? Oh, Warcraft, I think. Anyway.
For the Horde?
No, I was like, For the Fallen! I'm trying to remember what game that was. I think it was a Blizzard game, but I don't remember anymore.
World of Warcraft.
It was World of Warcraft?
Yeah.
I don't play World of Warcraft, so.
There's the Alliance and the Horde.
Yeah. Okay, first game to talk about tonight is called Ghost Runner, developed by One More Level, published by 505 Games and All In Games, released October 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Ghost Runner offers a unique single-player experience of fast-paced violent combat on an original setting that blends science fiction with post-apocalyptic themes, tells the story of a world that has already ended and its inhabitants who fight to survive. Sounds a bit too close to home. Tim, what do you think?
Oh my god. We are all the Ghost Runner. No, it's still a ways away from home. I think everyone's like living in a building in this game, like a really big building or something like that. I don't know.
Oh my god, I live in a building.
You play as well, but not with everybody, you don't right now. But I guess in the future, I don't know. Anyways, you play as Genji from Overwatch, basically. That's what I felt like was going on. Yeah, okay, so this game, gives me a bit of the Mirror's Edge vibe, and that you got a first person kind of platform parkourish dealio going on. You are a cyborg ninja, resurrected. Well, I guess, I don't know, put back together. You took a bad spill, at the very beginning of the game, and then they put your ass back together, and then you have some, disembodied voice, who's certainly trustworthy. Giving you some advice to move you through you're like fighting some corporation and going into a cyberverse, which is like an astral plane, except it's in a computer, to do stuff. And you got to stop the bad guys. That's what's going on. But yeah, the gameplay is all first person perspective. Hold on to your motion sickness, friends, because this game is fast paced.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it didn't get me too bad. It didn't get me too bad, but I could definitely if you do have a sensitivity to that, I mean, like, this is not like a slow moving game at all. Requires a lot of like whipping your head around. And also to that point, I was just like, man, I wish I was playing this on PC kind of, but I got into the hang of it. So yeah, you run around, you mantle up on ledges, you run on walls, you jump off of the walls onto other walls to run on them, and then jump off of those. You have that. You have a short dash. I say short because, like, I mentioned the Overwatch Genji thing because I, you know, played a good deal of Overwatch in my day. So that was like what my muscle memory was like trying to harken back to, and just like the forward range on this, on the Ghost Runner's dash is not that of Genji's dashing slash move, and that threw me off like real bad. But that is 100% a me problem. But anyways, what you can do that Genji can't do is that when you're dashing in midair, you can hold the dash button to like slide your character around. Which is handy when there's dudes on the ground shooting at you. So if you see them getting ready to shoot at you, you can hold that dash button, slide your dude to the left and dodge a bullet, and then dash forward on top of them. At which point you can use your sword to cut them in half. What was that? Was there like some humming? Anyway,
there's like a, I don't know if there's bikers going by my house or what, but
now we know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. And you can also, you know, duck slide under things like if, so, you know, the idea is, you know, you're running, you're trying to keep your character in motion, and trying to move through the environment as quickly as possible. I think this game would be probably a blast for speedrunners. It might be a washing machine if you're watching a speedrunner, we'll see. But yeah, it's like jump up, wall run, jump up, you know, air dash, slide, move out of the way, jump down, cut this guy, run forward, slide under a thing, jump up, mantle on this, wall run here, go there. Oh, and you also get a grapple beam deal. So you can, there will be grapple points, so that gets mixed into the parkour combat madness mixture. So you'll have that you have to keep track of as well, so you can grapple up onto things. And it's specific grapple points. It's not just like any old damn thing. Like they'll be shiny and blue. But yeah, you grapple onto those and then you move forward through the environment. Da, 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 da. And the game looks like really slick, like really well produced, like good looking graphics, you know, for what I will call a budget priced game at $30. But it looks nice and slick and futuristic and neon and all that stuff. And that's cool. But I think, unfortunately, it falls into like some of the same pitfalls of a game like Mirror's Edge when you have this kind of platforming parkour focus and then you're mixing in combat. And when you mix in that combat, that's where things start to get dicey. And that was the case back with good old Mirror's Edge. And that's kind of the case with this one as well. In that, so you're ninja, you're cyborg ninja man. He can take one shot.
That's it.
That's it. You get one.
It's a shitty cyborg.
You know, that's what I thought. You know, there is a tech tree. There are upgrades you can get in this game to make yourself more powerful. But at the base level, it's like you take one shot and it makes things hard. I mean, like the game will reload pretty quickly, but it just like it is. I mean, I died like 30 some times in the first level, and you're going to die a lot in this game. I died way more than that in subsequent levels, but it's like, you're going to die a lot, but it's just like, I had a good time when I'm platforming around. And then it's like, as soon as they started like weaving in, cause you'd kind of like go into a larger room and there was like guys scattered about and there's like a rough path. You can kind of look and be like, okay, I have to go. They kind of want me to go around this way first, you know, take this route around, kill this guy, come back around and then kill these guys over here, and just like stay in motion. So it's like, you know, when it works, when you go through and you hit all the points into a room, you just fly through, do your wall runs, jump, zip, zang, boom, bow, jump on top of this guy, slash him, you know, dodge a bullet, slash the next guy, jump up on the next wall, like run over here, go do that. Like it's slick. It's some slick ass ninja shit, but it is hard to pull that off. Like I feel like it requires a pretty high level of mechanical skill to like pull that stuff off smoothly.
So it's good Cole didn't cover this one,
I guess. Yeah, but it's
kind of a shame because I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Mirror's Edge, but I saw other people playing the game and I was like, fuck that. That looks hard.
It is fucking hard.
I was sad.
Yeah. But also, you know, you get a degree of like trial and error when you go into these encounters, and sometimes it's just like I just don't even know where the guys are, so like I'm just getting one hit kill shot when I'm just trying to like kind of get my bearings and be like, okay, I killed this guy, where's the next guy shooting me from? Like I'm trying to keep moving and be aware, but like sometimes you just get zapped, or it's like sometimes I misjudge my dash and I just get zapped, or I'm just trying to figure my way around the room and I'm just getting zapped left and right, and I'm just like, man, this is just oh, this is killing me. Literally killing me.
Repeatedly.
And what I wished, and again, fucking Overwatch. So Genji has an ability where you hit it. It's on a cooldown. You can deflect bullets in Overwatch. And I desperately wanted that for some kind of like a quick defensive thing to do that. And they do have it so that if you slash a shot with your sword, you will, like, you can destroy it, or if you upgrade it, you can knock the shot back at the enemy. But I found that to be very difficult to pull off and only kind of did it accidentally when I was running up on a guy to slash him. And it's like, oh, he shot me at the exact moment where I was getting in range to slash at him. And then it worked out. It was just like the platforming is pretty fun. That was kind of the best part of the game for me. It was fun to parkour around. And even sometimes going through these environments, like I'm kind of running around and like just you're trying to figure it out and basically react on the fly to like what you need to do to get through. And sometimes it's just like, oh, shit, I didn't see there was a grapple point above me. So now I'm going to fall to my death. And that's that. That happens, of course. It's not always smooth sailing, but it was more enjoyable to it's like once I got into a room with enemies, it was just like, oh, shit, here we go. This is going to be a massive pain in the ass and make me want to stop playing. So, you know, it's a slick game. It's got a fun design. It is. Some people are going to have an absolute blast of a time with it, but I feel like the average experience is going to be a lot more frustrating.
Well, $30 on it. What are you thinking about?
It has to be a try it. Like it's, like, I wish, like, if there was a demo of the first stage out there, you could probably play that and figure out, like, very quickly, like, if you are going to like this game or not. But, you know, I think, you know, maybe, like, high-level people that really play a lot of FPS stuff will get, or just, like high-level mechanical challenging games will get a lot out of it. But I think your average person probably won't, despite the, you know, the fact that it is cool to look at and cool to play when everything is running smoothly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's the very definition of try it before you buy it.
Sounds good. All right. Next game is Oceanhorn 2 Knights of the Lost Realm, developed and published by Corn Fox and Brothers, released October 28th on the Switch for $29.99. Oceanhorn 2 Knights of the Lost Realm, set 1,000 years before the events of the first chapter, takes you on a magical journey across the vast world of Gaia, brimming with mythology and lore. A young knight faces an impossible challenge as Warlock Mesmeroth has returned with a formidable dark army. Will our hero be able to unite Auris, Gilfolk, and men in a fight for the fate of the world? Tim, how did your party reunion go?
It went okay. It went all right, you know? So yeah, Oceanhorn, if you're not familiar with the original Oceanhorn, it was kind of like an early sleeper game, I guess I'd say, that was out on the Switch when there wasn't like a ton of games out on the Switch. So like a lot of people checked it out on there. And the first game was kind of Zelda-ish. And the second game is kind of Zelda-ish. Though the first game was a bit more of an overhead three quarters-ish perspective. This is like a straight up like behind the back. Like, my God, this dude is wearing brown pants and a blue shirt, and it looks like knockoff Breath of the Wild. What is going on here? That is how it's like. I mean, yeah, it's what they're going for. God damn it. Like, let's not beat around the bush here. This is like a Zelda light going on here. So you have your Linkish looking hero in his blue shirt and his brown pants and his grunts and squeals and his role and his inability to jump, except when he gets to the edge of a platform and then he will auto jump. And he has his items, his thing that will shoot things at a distance, and his eventual ability to light a torch from a distance, his ability to bomb things, etc.
Joe, that's unfair. Stop showing pictures of Zelda in the chat.
I'm just saying, like, there's nothing.
It is very Zelda-like. It does look, nothing but with a gun.
Outwardly wrong with going for that. I mean, honestly, there is not. I mean, like, remember, you know, when the first Darksiders came out, and it was like gothic hell Zelda. It was like, oh man, this is pretty cool. Like, even though it's cribbing so much of those mechanics and kind of game design, it felt cool applied to a new scenario with some new ideas. Did I just hear it? I don't know if somebody just yelled upstairs. I hope something bad didn't just happen.
You want to check on it?
No. It might have just been in my head. I don't know.
The voices in your head are screaming.
I hear voices in my head.
All of our voices in our heads are screaming.
They talk to me. I think it might have been so, like, but shortly, I don't know, a couple hours ago, we discovered there's a big hole in the pipe under the sink, and perhaps my wife walked over and actually turned on the sink, forgetting that there was a hole under there.
No, no.
Yeah, whatever. It might not have been that. I don't know. She might have just stubbed her toe. Who knows? might have just been a bad meme. I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Oceanhorn 2. So, yeah, you got your dude, and you run around 3D explore adventuring. You fight some monsters. I guess I'll say here, one of the big problems, perhaps the biggest problem I have with this game, is there's no fucking like lock-on targeting, which baffles me, as that's been a thing that's been around for decades now. And, like, you know, it doesn't make it unplayable, but it sure makes the combat a lot less enjoyable than it might be otherwise, when it's just like, oh, I, you know, kind of run up, slash at this guy, and then I do like a little twirly circle to come back around on him again. like I'm attacking him like I'm a dog fighter. And yeah, I don't know. It's just baffling. Like every like 3D action combat game has lock on targeting, and this doesn't. And it's just like, what are you, what, why? And it detracts from the gameplay quite a bit. But yeah, you fight your monsters, and you know, none of them are all that difficult. That makes it like a huge detriment. But you know, I know it would feel better if it had such a thing.
Yeah,
you solve light puzzles. You're trying to, you know, light torches, hit switches, you know, find your way up around in rooms, and you get, you know, like a few new items. You have these. Your companions that you get together, and you can order them around, and sometimes they listen. you can throw things. By the way, you can throw barrels surprisingly far in this game. I was stuck early on a puzzle where there was a switch up on a platform, and I thought I had to tell my robot friend to like jump up there and hit the switch, but it turns out you can launch a fucking barrel. Like, turns out, by the way. But yeah. But that's like the gist. That's just kind of it. Like, it doesn't do anything exceptional or, you know, crazy or fresh with that kind of formula. It's just like, okay, here it is. You slash at bushes to get items. You're mute dude. You know, you fight some basic enemies. Like, the first ones they throw at you are blobs that look like the little blobs from your Zelda games. You solve kind of these Zelda-esque puzzles, and that's it. That's what you do. And I mean, I guess it could have been like the companions, but like using them is kind of like, they're there, but they're not very smart or engaging to mess around with. So it's just kind of like, okay, all right, like it's fine to play around with it. I will say the game looks like really nice. Just to look at, I did find like a couple of seams in like the walls, the polygons, like literal seams. Like, I can see like a blue line down here where these two pieces of the wall are meeting. But for the most part, like, yeah, it looks pretty solid, pretty decent, nice, colorful, cool art, stuff like that. And yeah, there's nothing like cripplingly wrong with it. There's nothing that is like wildly exceptional about it. It's just like, if you want some like solid to like okay Zelda-ish action, this might be the game for you. And if you're kind of like, if you want something like a little fresher, like this might not be a stop for you on your gaming journey right now.
No, I dabbled with this one on Apple Arcade when it first launched on there.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for it to come to an actual console so I could play it with a controller and on a screen and not on a friggin' iPad.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, go figure. But $30 on it. What do you think?
I think it's another try it. Like, and it's not, you know, it's okay. It's fine. It might be, if you're looking for that sort of thing, I think you'll dig it. But, you know, I don't think you're going to miss out by not playing it necessarily. So, you know, it's all right. It's okay. It's fine. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for you. Do you have any final words about the election or any more politics you would love to discuss before we let you go?
Oh, man. I would just say that, you know, keep in mind, it might take a while for all them votes to come in. Yeah. How does it feel to live in a state where your vote actually fucking counts, Joe?
Oh, my God. It sucks because I'm surrounded by fucking racist rednecks.
Yeah. In your particular region.
Yeah. You've been here. You know what it's like.
Yeah. Yeah. In that section. But just hoping for the best. Hang in there, you know. Usually, you know, let's. I'll just say the one thing that I'm kind of like holding on to, and I'm like trying not to pay attention to any of this in general, is just that like pretty much all like, you know, everyone has said that like turnout has been really, really high this election. It seems like it has been very high, and usually very high turnout means bad things for Republicans.
So bad things for bad people.
For bad things for bad people. That's why they try to keep big turnout from happening. So I hope that's the case. And if there's big turnout and it turns out everyone showed up for Trump, then clearly
our nation is just
living
fucked.
In the wrong country.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you have yourself a wonderful night, and we'll chat with you later.
Yep. Later. See you guys.
Have a good night,
man. Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Visage, developed and published by Sad Square, released October 30th on Xbox One for $34.99. It's a first-person psychological horror game. Explore a mysterious, ever-changing house in a slow-paced, atmospheric world that combines both uncannily comforting, horrifyingly realistic environments, and enjoy a genuinely terrifying experience. Cole, you love your horror. What'd you think of this one?
Visage gave me a Sad Square in my feels. So... That's not a knock on the game. It sounds bad at first, but let me clarify a little bit, okay?
Okay.
This game deals with a lot of really harsh, horrible shit.
Well, it is a horror game.
The opening sequence is somebody killing a family and then committing suicide.
Well, I mean, it is a horror game.
From a first-person perspective. I understand that, but that's like... the way it opens the gates, right? And it does not let up on you for the entirety of the game.
Damn.
It is a first person exploration. Starts off, you have the horrible cutscene, but then you are in a house, in a room with no fucking clue what's going on, but you can explore around, and that's going to be how you play the game. This is minus a handful of puzzles, this could very much so be a walk-sploration. You're just meant to kind of experience the stories and the horror that they bring along with them. It's meant to fuck your head, and it will do it hardcore with no loop.
Well, damn.
Yeah. It doesn't even ask. It's just like, oh, that's a nice ear you got there. Punk! And you're fucked.
Damn.
But it's just, I don't have problems with like difficult topics in games, minus a couple of issues, which this one's just like, hey, that issue you struggle with right here, opening scene, deal with it. The entire point is that the stories are broken up. A couple of families have lived in this house over the years, and they've all come to some kind of horrible demise. And so you are reliving those stories as you explore this house. I'm monitoring my cat because I'm pretty sure he's going to try to get up on top of my computer and turn it off.
Nice. Now, if you disappear, we know what happened.
Yeah, you need to move. Okay. So you are exploring this house and you are reliving these stories, and sometimes you are taking it outside of the house. I don't want to say where. I don't want to give anything away because the narrative is what's important here. There are a couple of things to consider as far as gameplay goes. Like I said, it does pretty much fall into the walk exploration category. There are a couple of puzzles that will come up, but you do also have to manage inventory. You need to find items, typically keys, and also candles, because your character will lose their ever-loving shit if they're in the dark for too long. There is one nice element about Visage that it doesn't chastise you if you need icons on your HUD to help you keep up with when these things are happening, right? Like, you can go into the settings and you can turn on or off a HUD icon that shows your sanity level. If you're losing your shit, it will let you know. And you don't have to just, like, go at it hardcore. You can have those indicators, and then you have the option to, you can literally pop pills. I was walking around the game at one point double fisting antipsychotic meds. Okay. I'm like, I'm in the dark. Nice. Pop. I'm in the dark. Pop. Left fist, right fist. I was going for it. I was going to get through it, but I was scared. There may or may not have been a little fear pee.
Nice.
And that's a good thing. That's what you want when you're playing a game like this. The interesting thing is that knowing bad shit's going to happen, knowing there are paranormal elements that you're not going to be able to explain, knowing that all of that is there, fucks with you almost as much as the actual narrative does. Like, you can very much just go into this game and have your own self hyped up of how scary it's going to be. Like, when I loaded it up and I went to play it, I was like, I know it's a scary game. But then immediately as I started to explore the house, I was like, what if it's scarier than I think it is, though? Like, I've heard people talk about having nightmares after this. What if I have nightmares? And before I knew it, I had scared the shit out of myself, and I wasn't even in the first chapter yet. I was just in the prologue looking for a key.
Jeez.
And I put the controller down, and I was like, this is going to be scary. That's a good sign, though. Like, if a game's reputation precedes it to the point that you're scared before you even get out of the prologue, because it's just already, the moment you're in it, you're like, yeah, all that horrible shit I've heard about this game is true, and I'm scared now.
Jeez.
Pernell,
did you get a chance to dabble with this game at all?
I did dabble with it a bit, and honestly, the most interesting thing that I'm coming out of this with is, like, I'm genuinely glad that Cole was the one who did the review, because while the game, I don't think the game is bad by any means, I do think that it wasn't what I was hoping it would be, in a sense. Because, well, to get a little bit of quick context without going, taking on the whole review or whatever, you know, Visage is pretty much someone saying, hey, PT was a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. What if we made a full game out of PT? And when I played
PT.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, PT was like a Konami. It's really a demo, though people stopped calling it that for some reason. But it was a demo, like a concept game of them saying, hey, this game is like the lead in to what's going to eventually become this Silent Hill game, this new Silent Hill game. And it has you exploring one hallway with, like, maybe three rooms in the house. And different things happen on various loops because you keep repeating the same loop, but with variations changed on it. So it was cool then. And I'm like, I can't wait to see, you know, what they do with this concept. Visage is literally that. It's just in a much bigger scale, because now you have a full house and you're not just repeating the same hallway over and over again. But for some reason, something got lost in the mix for me. Either that, or I just kind of realized that the game needed something more than just walk around until events happen or thing catches you and kills you. Because I'm sure I probably missed some stuff, but I do know that much of the game is staying out of the dark. If you stay in the dark too long, like you mentioned earlier, you lose your shit, and then paranormal events can affect you and ultimately potentially kill you. But you're also experiencing the narrative through a number of, like, situations where you experience events as they happened to the people who lived in the home. But I kept wanting something more to occur. Like, I wanted to feel like I was, I don't know, felt more engaged, but instead it was just like walk around the house to find, you know, vignettes, essentially. But it just wasn't doing it for me. But I will say what I did like the atmosphere. I liked the atmosphere that they created, and the house itself did look nice. Like, I really did like the home.
It really is. Like, for a horror game, it's lovely.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I like that you were able to interact with a lot of the objects in the house. Like, you could open up a bunch of the cabinets and just, like, kind of take stuff off the shelves and look at them, even if you didn't need them for anything.
I will say, though, the interaction is the game. The interaction and the inventory are the weakest parts of the game.
Agreed.
Because I even went into the menus, much like you can change the HUD for how much is available to you and isn't. You can also change whether you have simple or advanced controls. And when I started off, I just left it on default. And I was like, why are these controls so fucking convoluted? And so I went back in and I changed them down to simple. And at the same time, it was still fucking convoluted. And there were times where, like, I would just be sitting there trying to manage the inventory and go, I can't make anything be where I need it.
Shaking your pill bottles, like, come on, what am I doing?
Yeah, like, it was literally, there were times where I was double fisting the pills because I couldn't figure out how to do anything else. Because it just, you know that you can set up candles and move the candles around and take them with you. And that lets you have a little more light so that you have a little more freedom to explore. But getting those candles in places where they are viable and also getting them lit is just a pain in the ass because just managing those controls just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned double fisting twice. Do you have a thing for fisting this week?
It does. I do when it involves antipsychotics.
Nice.
I'm right.
And Vicodin.
Works for me. So $35 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think this is a solid horror game, and I think it more than justifies its price. I would like to see some more options as far as maybe some more freedom to control the key bindings, the button bindings a little more. They're just not as good as they could be, and also that inventory needs a lot of work. But otherwise, I think it's a really solid horror game, and I had a good time with it.
Cool. Pernell, any thoughts?
I will say that if you were a fan, for folks who have played the PT experience, this is definitely a buy if you like solely what that was and want just more of that. This will deliver wholeheartedly. If you're looking for something a little bit more on the, like, action-y side, when I say action, I don't even mean like combat in this. I just mean like more like involved, like maybe like Outlast or something even. You're not getting that here, but it's just worth knowing what you're getting when you go into it. But as long as you're aware, based on what Cole described, I think it's a solid get. Just don't go in expecting something you're not going to get.
Sounds good. All right, next game is Prinny 1 and 2 Exploded and Reloaded, developed by Engine Software and Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America. Individual titles released October 13th on Switch for $19.99 each. Just Desserts Edition is available at retail for $59.99 and includes both titles, a collector's box, a scrapbook, a mix CD, and a block figure. 1,000 chances to be a hero or die trying. Get ready for an explosive adventure starring the Netherworld's worst hero, Prinny, when their demonic master, Beauty Queen Etna, tasks her lowly Prinny squad with fetching anything her heart desires. It's do or die, dude. This double dose of games features updated graphics, intense gameplay, and familiar faces from the Disgaea series. Brunel, tell us about Prinny 1 and 2 Exploded and Reloaded.
It's kind of funny that in its own bizarre yet kind of sad way, your description literally does describe the plot of both Prinny games. Like, you don't even have to break them up. This is just different things he wants you to get. When you're playing the Prinny games, when you go into them, the first thing you kind of want to think about as far as like what is the gameplay like is to picture a difficult platformer where the style where they pretty much give you like a basic set of skills and expect you to utilize said skills throughout the entire game. Like, you don't get power-ups per se, nothing that makes you better as a character throughout the game. It's just, here you are, you're a Prinny, and in the Disgaea universe, Prinnies are literal garbage. They are the worst enemy type in the game as far as, like, power levels go, and they even acknowledge it in this game, too. So if you didn't know that, the game would have made sure to tell you, but as a result, they are extremely weak. They explode when they're thrown. They're just terrible, which is pretty much why you get 1,000 lives, because the idea of the game is not that you're one Prinny with 1,000 lives so much as that you are controlling 1,000 Prinnies, and each time one dies, a new one takes up the mantle until you run out of Prinnies.
So you're annihilating an entire species with your poor gameplay.
Pretty much. But fortunately, all they got to do is wait another century or so, because once more sinners show up, they become printies. So, bam! Sinners become printies. Don't be a sinner, or you know what you'll be. A stitched penguin with peg legs and a low power rating. You're not Goku here, baby. So, the gameplay structure. What is the gameplay structure of Pretty? So, both games are generally the same with one particular difference, which I'll get into. So, Pretty can run, or rather, correct, he can walk, he can duck, he can run by hitting the button of the one button that lets him do a spin and then letting it go, and he'll kind of dash off in a specific direction. He can use the attack button to like slash twin daggers, which does a fair bit of damage, but not a ton. He can jump in the air and then hit the button up there and do what's called an air slash. The camera kind of tilts slightly and you'll throw like air blades down at an angle to the enemy. It's a way to do like a distance attack. And lastly, he can do a butt stomp a la Mario. Jump in the air, press down the jump button, and he does an attack button. He has a ground pound. What you want to do primarily with the ground pound, because you can't actually hurt enemies with it, you can stun them. So you jump in the air, butt stomp a guy, you stun him, and then you hit him with attacks, because while he's stunned, his defense goes to like nothing, and you can do much more damage with your normal attack while they're stunned. So a lot of the game will involve you stunning and smashing dudes. There is a combo gauge in the game, and this is where the two games differ. Combos are built by collecting. In the first game, you build combo by keeping your attacks constant, hitting enemies, butt stomping enemies over and over again until you max the bar up. Whereas in Pretty 2, the combo bar is increased by hitting enemies, collecting point items, and not getting hit. So it's much easier to charge the combo meter in that game. When you max the combo meter out in the first game, you'll get either an extra life or a point item. But in the second game, you go into like a sort of berserker mode, and you get all of your attacks to get new forms. So instead of your normal slash, you get like a more powerful slash. Instead of the air slash, you get the kamikaze dive. And instead of the normal dash running forward, you get like the cyclone spin, which is good for like damaging guys and stunning them. So it ends up becoming a major component of the second game to keep that combo gauge up, so you can always stay angry, so you can keep doing those cool attacks. But of course, if you ever get hit while you're in that mode, you will lose it. Now, as you play the game, the way it works stage structure-wise is there are about, I'll say, six stages out the default that you can choose from on each game. They each have their own respective difficulty level, but after you beat the level, the next level you pick is going to be harder. They all get exponentially harder. Well, not exponentially, they all become tougher.
The stages get harder as you go through the game?
Yes, correct. But not like, well, you're probably like, are you saying like in a sarcastic? Of course they do, Pernell. They always do. But this is different from even that notion. This is like, so let's say, think of a Contra game before, you know, like before the ones where they still let you choose stages, where it was just like stage 1 through 8. And as you run, stage 2 is harder than stage 1, stage 3 is harder than stage 2, etc. So in this game, it's a similar structure from choosing the stages too. Like stage 1 on the roster is easier than stage 2 on the roster, so on and so forth. But if I did, say, stage 3 with a 3-star difficulty rating, stage 4 now, which originally had a 4-star difficulty rating, will now have a 5. So every level gets harder when you beat a level. So it just gets harder to play, which means they change the enemy layout sometimes. There might be a few tweaks to the stages. Nothing exponential, nothing that's insane, like, oh my God, I got to play every iteration of a stage. But it's enough to be like, you know, it might be cool to do this stage last this time instead of first, something like that. So you'll want to be careful about picking the levels that you choose, because that's going to determine the difficulty of the stage you play. In addition to that, each game also has difficulty settings, which you'll want to consider. So, for example, in the first game, you have two difficulties. One that makes you die in one hit, so that's essentially you can get hit 1,000 times. You'll lose a lot of lives very fast in this game. Though I won't say you'll go through all 1,000, but you'll lose a lot of lives. The second mode in that game, you get 3 hits before you die. In Pretty 2, you got the 1-hit death mode. They turned the 3-hit death mode into like a baby mode, and normal mode is now 2 hits, not 3. There's no penalty to playing an easier or harder difficulty. It's just a matter of how much do you want to punish yourself. Which, that's being good. That you're playing in another world, you might want to punish yourself. Hit me, baby. Hit me, daddy. Whatever you want to call it. The games themselves, I think, are pretty fun. I forgot to mention the most important part as far as frustration goes, and that is jumping. This game is one of those games where you're committed to jumps. If you jump forward, you're going to keep going forward. You can double jump, and then that second jump change your direction, but then you're truly committed, and there's no turning back. You will lose a lot of lives just to that alone, because there'll be like a single spot jumping point, and you need to land exactly on it. You'll be looking like you're going to miss, and you'll panic second leap, and you're like, oh, shoot, I was going to make it, but now I can't fix it, and then you die. So just prepare for that. The gameplay, like I said earlier, is honestly, I think it's a fair bit of fun. It's not complicated. There's no real system to break down and deconstruct. It's just, here are your moves. These are all the moves you'll ever get, except for the occasional dumb vehicle you'll come across, which I genuinely didn't care about. Vehicles being like something you can jump inside of, like a metal slug, and shoot a few dudes before you can't drive it any further. You have to get out of it. That sort of thing. But they give you all the mobility structures you're going to get, and you just got to utilize it to the best of your ability to beat the game. If you're a fan of the Skya series and you missed these on the PSP, then this is something you want to look into, because the games take enemy types from both the Skya series and also some of the other Netherworld Nipponichi games like Makai Kingdom, and have the enemies kind of animate and run around on the screen. So it's kind of like how some people felt about Dragon Quest Heroes when they always played the Dragon Quest games, which is you get to see these cool enemies types interacting in a world instead of just being like a character that just kind of stands in the corner dancing, like, attack me, hit me. Now they're doing shit. And they'll kill you. They're trying to kill you in a whole new way. So that's kind of cool. And the voices are still great. The ones you've come to know and love. Etna's in the game. Laharl is not, because this takes place between, you know, after the first game when he dies and the good ending of the game. Because, yes, the good ending, the main character dies. But there's a good reason for that.
Spoilers.
So, yeah. If you haven't played this guy at one game, that's your damn fault. That's your fault.
I mean, the game's only, 15 years old?
Exactly. The game changed, like, strategy RPGs as we know it, pretty much. So, it's been a while. You had time. but this takes place after that game, so Laharl's not in it. But another thing worth mentioning, though, is that Asagi, who was, like, a character in the Disgaea series, who's, like, a joke character, is in the second game. And if you beat the game, you unlock her mode, which is another playthrough of the game, but with a variation of the rules, like new moves and different attacks and a different gameplay, you know, requirement to like progression. So it kind of changes the game up in a way that makes you go, if you already like this, Prinny 2, you'll want to unlock this mode and experience this different style of the game. It's worth playing. What is my take on the overall product? Well, I mean, the gameplay itself is fun. I had these both on PSP, and I like them. But again, they're not complicated games. They're just like, I don't want to call them massacre, because they're not nearly that. But they're like the beginnings of it, where they're designed to be tough, but not, in this case, they're not too tough. It's just more like everything's deliberate. If you die, it's your fault. That kind of thing. And they give you challenges to overcome. It's not a sleeper, unless you play on baby mode. Even then, you'll probably still die a lot.
I would play on baby mode.
It's not, hey, honestly, in a sense, that's what I'm playing on. That's why I played it on the first game, because, like I said, they took that and turned it into baby mode, and I ain't taking two scarves over three.
That's how I roll. Baby mode all the way. But $20 each for these, what do you think?
I think if you're going to try to piecemeal them out, I'd say buy one, then the other, because they're both fairly the same game with a few tweaks and just, like, you know, new characters to talk to. So maybe buy the first game first, and if you like that, buy the second. But again, the second game also comes with that bonus unlockable mode. So actually, maybe start with the second game because of that. So, but if you find yourself really liking Prinny, just get them both. Though, of course, then if you do that decision there, you won't get the cool, you know, collector's edition box. So if you're down with the physical, just take the dive and buy them both.
So $60 on the physical. You like that one too?
Yes, I would say so.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is Crimson Clover World Explosion, developed by Yatsubane, published by Dejica, released October 29th on Switch for $19.99. Prepare yourself for an insatiable rain of bullets, bombs, and beams in Crimson Clover. Can you pilot your craft through the bullet massacre the enemies have prepared for you? Or will your ship become just another bump amidst the endless wreckage beneath your wings? Chris, tell us about Crimson Clover World Explosion.
All right.
And well, a capital EX for explosion. Both letters are capital.
Yeah,
so it's explosion.
Or it's Crimson Clover EX Worldplosion.
That too.
That's how I like to read it. Well, considering the world is exploding, this is a very appropriate review.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Crimson Clover. So, this is a really, really hotly anticipated shoot 'em up on the Switch coming out. It originally found its home in Steam, I think, or just PC, and also arcades and such. A bit of an odd duck. It's possibly one of the best shooters ever made, and it was made by one person. So, it's... You know, normally when you say one person dev team, you think like, oh, well, then it's good for the fact that one person made it kind of thing. But like, this is good for anything. And yeah, so it's been very hotly anticipated by the shmup community. I'm pretty sure that like just, you know, I'm not part of any real community, but like, you know, just seeing things on like Twitter and stuff. I've been like seeing this game on there for like a year. Anywho's. So the game is... it falls under the vertical shooter category, and it's very specifically like a Danmaku or Bullet Hell. This is the kind of game where if you like see like the 4th of July, like, fireworks and, you know, the big climax one where they just, send off like 100 of them at once. And you're like, I wish that I could fly a ship in that and dodge it and dodge every spark. That's what this game is like. It's very much fireworks that you can dodge. And, sorry, I had to adjust something. This is that style of game. Now, this is what's, you know, genius about this one that kind of sets it apart. There's a few things, and I'm trying to, like, organize how to, like, talk about all of them at once. So the cool thing about this one is its simple approach to controlling the game. So you've got your like regular shot, which of course is, you know, the button that you're hanging on constantly. And any of these can be edited to whatever button you want. But let's say the A button is for shooting. And then the B button is one that you hold down to target enemies on the screen. And when you let it go, then it releases like a bomb that like takes them out too. So... So like it's basically shooting and then also targeting like at the same time kind of deal, which is a popular move. And then, as you go along, like, so, a real like, a real mainstay of shooters is the bomb, right? The screen clearing bomb. So the way they approach this one's a little bit different. It has a meter that goes up as you keep shooting and, you know, dodging shots and things like that. A meter goes up, and if that meter goes up all the way, then your ship goes into brake mode, which makes it more powerful, and your point multipliers go up too. This is a game that's very concerned with score, like a lot of the more popular Danmakus are. And there's even a second gauge that once you fill the first gauge, the second gauge goes up, and then you can go into double brake mode, which just makes you go, like, you know, completely nutso, like... OP for, you know, however long. Well, in the sense that anything in this game can be OP because of the way the difficulty scales, but we'll talk about that in a second. The bomb is actually part of that gauge, so you'll see a little line on the gauge, and if you can reach that, then you push the button to go into brake mode, and it instead sets off the bomb. And here's the thing, instead of just straight up giving you a limit on how many bombs you can shoot or you can drop, it just moves that line further up the gauge, so you have to collect more to drop the next bomb. So you can't just like spend every boss fight dropping five bombs and calling it a day. That's you know, that's a popular thing in this style of game. This game actually makes you think a little bit more on that one. So basically that's it, and like you go through five stages with you know, a mini boss and like a big boss. Usually the big boss has multiple phases and things like that. Everything is gorgeous in this game. It's kind of this sprite based shooter rather than like polygonal or anything like that. So it might remind you at first glance of like a fancier Psycho shooter, but it moves so fast and like everything is happening at once so much that it like it really, you know, becomes its own thing pretty soon. And it's really cool, like the way that like you can choose different ship types, and it's just type 1, type 2, type 3. You can even change the color of the ships once you choose them, which is interesting. Usually games don't let you get away with that. But, you know, they fall under like different categories of like the first ship has like a dedicated spread shot with like these four little option ships that like shoot out towards the sides and such. And then you've got the ship that has the option ships that follow it so that you can kind of choose where you want your shots to go. And then the third one is less, it's more straightforward, but very, very fast. It's a very fast ship, and they each have different kind of missile types and all this other good stuff. So, that's the gameplay in a nutshell. Now, what's really what really sets this one like apart is that it just has all of these modes. It has like three different styles overarching, and each one has four modes in it.
Damn.
If I'm even getting that right. So you've got like your novice difficulty, which is, of course, for people who don't want, you know, the screen to be full of bullets at all time. And that one only has like two modes that are actually like available. Just the standard original play through the game and a, what's called a boost mode, which is present in all of the different games, which boost mode, as opposed to like just the original mode where you can predict the difficulty and like, you know, and it scales up, of course, as you keep playing through the game and everything. Boost mode actually gets harder if you play better, and it gets easier if you don't play very well.
Hmm.
So like it's and that's something that's been around, but you hardly ever see that in like this exact genre. So that's actually pretty cool.
Dynamic difficulty is always cool.
Yeah. And then, so those are the two like in that, and then arcade mode, which is like the more standard difficulty, also features an unlimited mode, which is extreme on difficulty. It's like, it's an interesting one because like every ship that's on the screen is constantly raining bullets on you all the time. And, it's just relentless. It's so extreme that like, you know, I've hardly seen anything like it. But people who have played cave shooters, for instance, which are like the, you know, that's the darkened basement type of like shmup fan is like a cave shooter fan. Like the, you know, they would make body pillows out of cave shooters, you know? And, I'm going to get myself in trouble.
I feel attacked.
No, I have a huge collection of Xbox 360 cave shooters. So, you know, come at me, bros. So anyways, basically it's a lot like that. Now, here's the thing. In order to get past these onslaughts of bullets, which, of course, you're going to want to, because you're going to want to actually, you know, get somewhere in the game, you can actually, if you defeat an enemy with a bomb, it removes their bullets from the sky. So you can cut your path through this constant hail of bullets by cleverly, like, continually targeting enemies and using bombs instead of just shooting them. And so if you get into a rhythm, you can actually make it somewhere in this, in the unlimited mode difficulty.
I don't believe you.
Like that's kind of cool. Like it doesn't lock people out by calling it the extreme mode or anything. It's just called unlimited mode, and it's on arcade, you know, difficulty. And then there's a time attack mode where they don't even count lives. You just, you know, it just slows you down to die, of course, but they just put you in there, you know, for a limited amount of time, and you just get as many points as you can, and then you're done. Like, that's all there is to it. And an interesting thing is that all of these modes, just to get back to the other thing, there's also an arrange mode that is unique to the Switch version, where they change up the rules a little bit, where you gain bombs actually as items and like power-ups as items instead of it all kind of being built in. So it's a whole different way to play all these different modes. So it's like just another group of things to do. So anyway, what I like about this is that no matter the difficulty, no matter how extreme or not extreme the game is, it is definitely like they never make you stop playing the game. You can just keep hitting continue all the way to the end.
Nice. Rich kid strats.
Yeah, rich kid strats, exactly. You don't lose your progress on your bombs. You do sometimes lose your score, but not entirely. So, like, you can still, you know, at least have personal bests, but you get a huge bonus if you don't die. So, obviously, the 1cc crowd is going to be is going to have a whole different set of scores from the type who actually get hit every now and then.
Posers. So,
yeah, exactly. Anyways, yeah, it doesn't lock anybody out. Like, everything is customizable, and it's got this training mode where you can select any, like, part of the game, any half of the level, any boss, mini boss, even the extra boss at the end. If you know, I think 1cc the last level or something like that, you get a secret bonus boss. You can even fight that. You can put all that into training mode and just practice, and you can set all these parameters that I don't even have time to go into. And whenever you're playing it, you can save all of your replays in 50 slots that they give you, so that you're like, oh, I should learn this level. I'm going to, like, save my playthrough of it. And, you know, you can, like, just sit there and watch, you know, your ship go through it.
Nice. So a lot of content in the game, lots to do, $20 on it. What do you think about it?
I absolutely buy it. This one is, if not better than Rolling Gunner, it is right up there with Rolling Gunner as the best thing available on the Switch for people who enjoy shooters. Yeah.
That is high praise from you.
It is, yeah. And because the thing that I like the most about it, just overarchingly, is that the game keeps you playing. Like, you just get hooked in, and it's the kind of game that if you watch somebody playing it, you're like, I gotta play this for myself, even if you're not into shooters. Like, this is the kind of game that somebody will look over someone else's shoulder and become a shooter fan. You know, like, it is incredible how good this game is. And yeah, buy it and buy a copy for somebody else too. I mean, I can't give it any more praise than that. There's cool.
Get one for me.
I couldn't even find anything wrong with it.
Sounds good. All right. Next game is called Raise the Dead, developed and published by Ragtag Studio, released October 22nd on PS4 and Steam for $19.99. Experience the life and afterlife of Ray LaMorte as you unlock the mystery behind his death in this heartwarming dark comedy action adventure. Brunel, tell us about Raise the Dead.
Well, first thing to point out is Raise the Dead, some freaking great music, but I digress. Raise the Dead, the game, is an interesting little tale where you play as a little zombie man named Ray, who has recently been resurrected for reasons that he is unaware of. And also for reasons that he's unaware of, he has the ability to control the undead to do his bidding. So how does it work as far as a gameplay structure goes? Well, the way you run around the games, like, as you play, you move through set piece stages where, like, you're basically just exploring the level. And as you run around, initially, you can just attack. You press the trigger button and you swipe at enemies. You do damage that way, but that's not particularly effective in this game in the long run. But it's something to get you going. But the main meat and potatoes of the game is what happens when you get your first minion. Minions that you acquire come from one of two places, generally. Buried dead people, or by killing your victims and then resurrecting them. So when you get into skirmishes with general humans, they might come at you in a variety of different ways. They might, you know, try to melee attack you sometimes. They might have firearms. They'll try to shoot at you. Or they might do, like, combo attacks or whatever, but they always have, like, a bit of a pattern that you're watching for. And when you get an opening, you'll run up to them and you'll either attack them with your melee, or you will sick a zombie on them that you have in your control. But once that enemy is killed, you can jump on them and eat their brains for health. But whether you choose to do that or not, you can then resurrect their soul using a specific command, and then they join your zombie entourage, which starts out small, but gets to become pretty big by the end of stages, though it sometimes sort of soft resets to a smaller number when you transition between levels. So you won't have like 100 zombie. You won't have 100 zombie army here because the game won't let you. Oh. It will slow down if it did, probably, because a lot of zombies. But what ends up happening is over time, you'll accrue a larger zombie horde, sometimes of different colors with different properties. But for the most part, The zombies can then be sicked on varieties of enemies. So you might see a group of enemies that are available. You might be fighting a group of guys and like one guy's shooting at you, but he's got to reload. So during that time, sick five of your zombies on him, but hold on to the other zombies because another guy that you're fighting might be, you know, you still need him to kind of, you know, might need some zombies to take him out too. So you'll be juggling your zombie hordes as you fight dudes. As you run through levels, also, you'll be looking for, like, just the general collectible stuff. There are batteries you can acquire, which can then be used to extend your zombie power gauge, because when you do certain abilities, such as calling your zombies to you, you burn through this, you know, this energy gauge. But when you acquire batteries on levels for a certain amount of them, you can extend the gauge and then do your abilities for a longer period of time. And then aside from that, there's also tombstones, which some can be tough to find, but for the most part, they're generally just kind of thrown in the game to be discovered, because that was, if I'm not mistaken, based on what I got from the game proper, they were a Kickstarter thing where anybody who kickstarted this game when it was on Kickstarter got a name or message imprinted on a tombstone, which can be discovered in the game and go, oh boy, that guy sure is funny. He says something wacky. There it is. So you'll be doing stuff like that. So the game's got good humor to spare, too, as well. I like the whole, like, fake language nonsense. They talk like those guys from Southport. They're scared of gerbs. Imagine the gerbs line, but every word sounds like that.
Oh,
and it's hilarious. I genuinely love that element of the game. I love the humor. I like the music, I like the atmosphere, and I like the bits of stage breakdown, because the levels are broken up into like a split where sometimes you're still the main game area is you're controlling Ray as you're trying to figure things out with your disembodied voice friend to discover why you're there, you know, who you were, and all this good stuff. Like basically trying to piece the story together. But then there are these like past vignettes that play as levels too, where you're actually playing as Ray as a human, but still capable of controlling people, because in the past they attributed to him being very charismatic and a person that people would listen to, you know? So it was like, oh, Ray, we'll do it. Come on, let's go. We work together. But as a zombie, it's like, well, I own your brain, so, or your lack of, so, blah, blah, you know? So, but the same general idea, just in different perspectives. all in all, I did find the game enjoyable. However, the one hiccup, well, I forgot also, sometimes you can like, send zombies to solve puzzles for you, too. It's not always about eating and attacking guys. Sometimes you want the zombies to do things for you. Like, for example, there might be situations where you need the zombies to take out structures, but you need to time it so that they attack the structure at the exact same time. It's like, okay, send that guy there. It takes an X amount of time to get from here to there to start attacking the tower, so I got to plan so they both get there around the same time. So it adds a little bit of tension to like when you're trying to do stuff, too. Now, what was I going to say? Yeah, the game is honestly a genuinely good time. I like the music. I like the gameplay. The one thing that bugged me about the gameplay, though, was that there was this like sort of like disconnect. Like if you ever had to rely on the claw attack, it was annoying, because a lot of times it just kind of felt like you were doing the battle of attrition thing, like you're attacking dudes, but you are just going to get your ass beat because the claw attack is garbage. But in some respects, I think that was intentional, almost like this is what you're going to do when you just ran out of zombies to use. So don't run out of zombies, because they do ultimately get killed and you can resurrect them. But if you don't, then who knows, you lose them. But I wasn't letting my zombies die. I was picking them back up off the ground. But if you run out of zombies, you'll be stuck with that melee attack, and that melee attack is hot garbage. The game, like I said, but other than that, I actually kind of enjoyed it. It was a fun time to play around with. It wasn't exceptional or anything like that, but it was fun. Like, the writing is funny. I like the concept of the, whoops, stuff's falling on the floor. I like the idea of just, like, you know, controlling zombie masses to attack goofy human folk, and then of course turning them to your side as well. It's a nice little gimmick. It's a nice bit of a gimmick. Just again, this is one of those games where you don't come into it expecting like this this masterpiece of gameplay, because it's a simple game or a simple bit of fun with a simple zombie with a light bulb on his head
and a banging soundtrack.
Gotta love that soundtrack. It's just really good.
We should what's the word? release a disclaimer that we are friends with two of the composers of the game, but that doesn't affect our judgment at all because it's just the music and we could listen to that separately.
That, and I've told friends that music has sucked in the past, so I have no qualms doing it again. But that's not this case. These guys turned out some butter. Sweet butter.
Agreed. They very much did so. But $20 on this game, what are you thinking?
I honestly think it's a buy. It is a good time. It sucks that we're just past Halloween, but if it was before Halloween, it would have been definitely just get on this. Do it before the sun sets.
Well, that's the joys of getting things after a release and reviewing, and we can't control that stuff, but
buy it for next Halloween.
Enjoy it now. Yeah. Enjoy it now, and the world is going to get really scary for the next few weeks, so just pretend that Halloween is all year now.
Complete with masks. Wait a minute. Don't go there.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Goner 2, developed by Art in Heart, published by Raw Fury, released October 22nd on Xbox One and Switch for $11.99. In this sequel to Goner, journey your way through the deep, dark, chaotic places with unimaginable sparks of color as you go on a mission to help Death rid a mysterious presence from her lair, battle crazy bosses, lose your head a lot. In this messy, cute, fast-paced, procedurally generated platformer, I almost got through that without fucking up my words. Cole, what'd you think of Goner 2?
It's a roguelike, it's very hard, but it's still a lot of fun, and you should buy it at the end. No.
No, we need a little more.
A little more? God damn it, Joe, I'm trying to speed run here.
Stretch it. We gotta stretch it to at least, like, a few minutes.
Ah, fuck. Okay, fine. So, Goner 2 is goddamn hard. And I bitch about games being hard a lot. And this is no exception, except for the fact that it's a roguelike, and I'm oddly more forgiving of games being hard when they're roguelikes. Probably because I like the genre. I would love to see another roguelike that was like the story goes on, that's just stupid, easy, baby roguelike, and like lets you roll through it really quickly. And Goner 2 is not that. And yet at the same time, I still had such a good time with it. And I was like, every time I died, I was like, well, fuck, let's do it again. I think the fact that it relies on this cycle of going into the lair, you start off in death lair. Wow, I can't say that.
I'm not the only one who can't talk tonight.
Death lair. Wow. Death
lair.
Yeah. Anyway, you start
Death
there.
Death Slayer.
You start there, and you pick up your head, and you pick up your backpack, and you pick up a rifle. And then there are these worm thingies that look like long neck llama worms. And when you jump into them, they open their mouth, and you jump inside, and then you heave all the way down through it to the next scene. And then you press A to jump out of its butt. And at that point, then all the enemies will attack you and you start shooting them. And when you clear them all out, you get to go to the next worm thingy and jump in its mouth and go down its butt.
Yay.
And come out into another level and do it again. The game uses procedural generation, so the levels are all different every single time you played. But there's another unique aspect where the level is built up as you're exploring it. It literally just pops into existence as you get there. So sometimes you may be going up a wall and you'll have no idea if it's going to end in a ceiling or if it's going to lead to nowhere or if you slide down it, if you're going to die or if you might find something nifty. So there's a lot of reason to explore, but there's also a risk to it. That said, despite the difficulty, despite the risk, there are some ways that you can, like, keep going, even if you fuck up, which adds to that willingness to explore and rely on trial and error, because you don't know what the fuck you're going to get into each time. The very first little worm portal you go through, I popped out of its butt, and I had a choice that I could go left or go right. And left had an icon for a fish, and right had an icon for a little floating bat dude. And I was like, fuck it, that looks like Magikarp. Let's go with the fish. And I found myself in an underwater level that I was not ready for, and I died very quickly. And so every other time that I come out of the worm's butt, and I had a choice if I could go left or right, and there was a fish there, I immediately went the other way. Because I don't like underwater levels. And I will never get the achievement for beating the squid boss, and I don't even give a fuck because I ain't going to the underwater levels.
I keep coming back in on this hearing, like, come out of the worm's butt. I'm like, come out of the worm's butt. The darn
you do, worm. The worm.
Oh my God, what game is this?
You have to press A to jump out of the worm's butt.
Out of the worm's butt.
You press A once to pop out, and then you press A to actually jump out of it. Like, otherwise, just your head pops out, so you can kind of see. Oh, Lord. So, if you get hit, you lose your head and your gear, and you're kind of just like a little water blob jumping around. You can take this opportunity to get your shit back. But if you get hit again, then you are dead. However, if there are hearts left, you get a chance to revive. And this requires that you spam the A button a whole fucking lot. But it also requires that there are the little pink bubbles that come out whenever you kill enemies laying around. Because if you have those little bubbles rolling around, it will get sucked up into the skull thingy and you're allowed to come back. If there aren't enough to satisfy the big angry death skull, you don't get to come back. I can't figure out the rhyme and reason of this. It's just a thing that I know exists in the game. There is a big angry death skull, and if I don't fill it up with little pink baubles, I don't get to come back. That is one of the most frustrating things about Goner 2. It doesn't explain any of this shit to you. It throws you into the world, and it goes, good luck.
First game was kind of the same, though, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And they have absolutely just gone all in on this hope for the best mentality. And again, I think, though, it works out because it does have the loop of it just throws you back into the lair and you can try again. And like, it doesn't feel like there's any true punishment for death because you're meant to die. You're meant to learn what you're capable of dealing with, what you're not, and how to get around it. So even though it's difficult, it doesn't feel unfairly punishing.
That's
and
good.
Those are two very different, you know, things to feel. If you fight it out long enough, you're eventually going to make progress. When I was playing it, my first attempts, there was this big ass pink stork looking bird, maybe an ostrich. Either way. It was big, it was pink, and it was dumb, and it kept killing me, and I was so mad. Like, it was so hard just to get to this bird, and then it would kill me over some dumb shit, right? Because I jumped wrong, or I touched it, and you can't jump on it like you can everything else, and I didn't know that. But then I did know it after I died to it, and I gradually got to where I could make it to the boss more quickly and with more of my life intact. And then eventually, after about 27 attempts, I beat it. And I put the controller down and I was like, fuck yeah, I'm the fucking best. I finally killed the big dumb bird. And then the achievement pops up and it's like, congrats, you killed the big dumb bird. And I was like, see? It feels the way I feel about it. So even though it's hard, and this is normally a game I'd be like, ah, this isn't really viable, it's hard. It's reasonable within its limits for its genre and what it is. I would say I would like to see some options for, you know, from an accessibility standpoint, maybe just let me hold the A button or toggle it as opposed to actually having to smash it. I get why it's there, but I don't like it. It gives me hand fatigue and I have to stop playing the game more quickly and nobody likes that.
True. Well, as it stands, $12, what do you think?
I think $12 plus it's also in Game Pass and you should just fucking buy it. It's definitely worth it. Now, if you're not a roguelike fan, then at that point, try it in Game Pass first. But this is made for people who already know they like roguelikes.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be a beginner into the genre game as much as I would like to see one of those again as a nice change of pace. You know, it is what it is, and it does what it does well.
Cool. Works for me.
Yeah.
All right. Next game is called The Wizard and the Slug, developed by Silkworm, published by Meridian 4, released November 2nd on Steam for $9.99, plays the fastest, most agile slug in gaming history on its unforgettable quest with a spellcasting wizard as a sidekick. Chris, what is The Wizard and the Slug?
Okay, so The Wizard and the Slug is basically a... actually, at first I thought it was going to end up being like kind of a Metroidvania because it acts so much like one, but it kind of isn't. It just sort of progresses along this linear path. So it's a linear path type of platformer that tries to be highfalutin like a Metroidvania, you know, introducing new powers and new things like that. But anyways, so yeah, it's kind of based in this lore of like how there's three different kinds of creatures, and one of them is mysterious and we're not talking about them yet, and the others are mortals, and then the others are immortals. And immortals live forever, but they can't reproduce. Mortals can reproduce, but then they die. So it's like... It kind of establishes like this lore, like it's going to be like a real serious story, even though everybody looks like, you know, cereal box mascot, like levels of cuteness. but yeah, it basically starts off with this immortal who is fleeing from a whole bunch of bird demons or something like that. And they crash land to the Valley of the Berries, which they are berries, like basically walking grapes, but they're called berries, B-A-R-R-Y. So it's like, it's, the game's a little weird in its humor. And nearby, there's a slug enjoying a nap, and you get to play as this slug, which is actually more of a slime with two little arm things coming out of its head. They seem vestigial. You don't actually use the arms, so I don't know. But anyways, the slime picks up the missing limbs of the immortal, because the immortal lost an arm and a leg in the process. And the immortal introduces themselves. I say them because it's an androgynous being, and there's no established gender to this character. So there's a lot of mystery. In fact, I think largely the game deals with the mystery of this character. But anyways, so this being introduces themselves as the wizard, and is like, wizard, yeah, that sounds good. You know, kind of being shifty. And so this wizard decides that the slime is going to go on this adventure to do something having to do with, I guess, ultimately helping all of mortal kind out with something else. Again, it's not explained initially. It's kind of a mystery. And so you go through the stages, and the gameplay is basically that, you know, it's platforming and it's combat, both of which are done by the slime forcefully ejecting bits of slime off of it until it becomes smaller. So you get a jump, a double jump, and even a triple jump, but each one you lose a glob of slime until you're just like one little glob. And then you have to like wait a second for your gelatinous self to become whole again. Same thing goes with attacking. You can attack once and then twice, and then you have to wait a second while you're... because you're basically shooting bits of yourself, so you have to wait to, you know, get the slime back. And after you beat bosses and such, like, new powers get unlocked, but, you know, kind of use the same principle. And a lot of story happens. Like, it's a dialogue-rich game, so I think it's kind of maybe in that vein of, like, what people call darling indie platformers, in that, like, there's actually a serious story going on and, like, some real heavy shit. But then it's like a cute game where you jump around and have fun. Speaking of which, berries are like all around the first level. Like, the berries are just adorable and they don't do anything. Like, they don't try to hurt you or anything like that. But It's just like stuff that goes on, like kind of in the background. Like one of them puts on a weird face, like it looks like kind of a human face, and everybody's just staring around it. And if you investigate the face like three times, it unlocks an achievement that says "looked at a weird face."
You want to know something weird going on in the background? I'm sure anyone watching the stream can see I'm not paying attention to you at all, and it's because our one cat mama has a mouse in my room with six other cats surrounding it.
That's the noise I'm hearing. I'm like, I hear like.
I feel like that mouse is.
Mouse no longer amongst the living?
It's still alive. I'm trying to text Ashley to come help me, and I guess she's sleeping. Like, I don't know what the fuck to do with this thing. None of these cats will just kill it. It's like, it's suffering. Just end it. Eat it if you have to. Just, you know.
That's the fun part for them, though. Yeah. That's the reason when our cats catch a mouse, we always take them outside and spray water in their face till they drop it.
I can't really do anything because I'm recording a show, but The Wizard and the Slug is $10. What do you think of it?
I like it. Go buy it.
The Wizard.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Ashley's here with the assist. There's the mouse running around. Ashley is watching it. Mama has grabbed it and is releasing it. Paper towel, because I have tons of paper towels at my desk. Here's napkins. Pickle is now investigating. Ashley is reaching down and...
Oh no, Mama's joining in on the...
Mama is definitely joining in on the fun. Where is it? Where is it? Mama probably has it in her mouth. No. Ashley... No. It's still running around the room. Oh. Ashley is picking it up and taking it outside. We have a victory.
And then Ashley takes the cat.
I heard the cats making noise. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then I look over and I see Pickle going. I thought he was going to attack Coltrane because Coltrane and Mama look very similar. And instead I went to spray Pickle and he just looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing? And then I looked over at Coltrane, who was Mama, and there was a mouse on the floor. I'm like, oh, that's what you're doing. Proceed.
Mama, moo.
Yeah, so election and mice.
Kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Oh, God. Next game to talk about is called Banner of the Maid, developed by Azure Flame Studio, published by CE Asia, released October 22nd on Xbox One for $16.99. Banner of the Maid is a mix of turn-based strategy and JRPG set in an alternate French Revolution with fantasy elements as the young officer Pauline Bonaparte. You will have to lead your troops to battle and play a role in the political vortex of Paris. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, this game... actually very much surprised me for how cool it is. Though I'm going to outright admit that, as usual with certain games, the plot didn't quite resonate with me, though I was more interested in the characters themselves and their personal interactions. I was never big on like history, and this is like a re-envisioning of like, I want to say the French Revolution, but I'm probably wrong. That just goes to show you how poor I am at this mess.
It is anyway, the French Revolution. I literally said it in the intro.
I've been drinking.
I can tell.
Not enough.
I mean, we just had a live play-by-play of Ashley catching a mouse in my room. What else does this show need?
Booze. But so this is like a re-envisioning of the French Revolution, but the way they go about it is that the battle's taking place, but there are these like, there's like this special like element where certain women are gifted with something known as like being like basically like a special ability, like coerce and like work with the populace, and it's referred to them as maids. They become talked about as maids, and they kind of get, you know, talk down to like they're witches or whatever, but in a weird way, it becomes like a weird conspiracy. But the cool thing about this is, by way of this scenario, this makes it a world where like the men and the women can fight in war. I went and looked up some of the history on some of these characters, like how they, what they were like in the real world. I was like, well, Pauline Bonaparte was not a general. She was a lady who birthed children.
That's why it's an alternate French Revolution.
I like this version of the French Revolution very much, because all these characters have like valuable roles to play in this war scenario, and the gameplay measures up very well to that concept. The best way to describe it would be to, well, at least to start, would be to liken it to the Fire Emblem series, because characters are differentiated by classes. And then within those classes, they have like specific like subsets of those classes. So let me think here. So like in Fire Emblem, you have the weapon triangle, you know, axes, swords, and spears. In this game, you have infantrymen, like light cavalry, heavy cavalry, and then one other that I can't remember. It's the four-way triangle. And thankfully, you don't have to remember it because the game makes sure to always keep it prominent in the upper right corner of the screen during all the battles, which is probably one of the best damn things they could have done, because I've always hated having to remember the weapon and magic triangles. I never liked it. I mean, I like the games, but not remembering things. But you have these characters. And then aside from that, they have their own specific abilities that come with them. So like you start out with a skill or two for every character, but as you play through the game, you eventually unlock the ability to spend money and pay collectibles that you've earned from battle or possibly purchase that lets you upgrade and gain new skills for these characters. So you might have a character who can do an attack and then immediately withdraw one space, sort of like an attack and retreat ability, that kind of thing. And the abilities get very diverse too. Like, I like them a lot. There's some pretty cool ones that pop up in this game. Far more diverse in a lot of ways than I'm used to in these kinds of games. So you'll look forward to actually unlocking them. And considering that that's a large part of what makes the characters different from each other, you will be, like, checking enemies on the field, too. Like, okay, what makes this guy special compared to that guy? Because they're both infantrymen, but there's something particularly cool about that infantryman. I got to figure out what his deal is. And you look up, like, oh, crap, he's got, like, freaking, like, dodge plus 20. I got to be careful attacking him. So the way it works in the game in general is, like, you'll get a mission, typically, and when you go to the combat field, sometimes you'll have a special condition that if you fulfill it, you'll get more rewards. But for the most part, you'll have a goal of, like, protecting a location or defeating specific targets or just wiping the floor with everybody. And as you play through these battles, your loss condition will involve Pauline dying or specific characters on your team passing away. On your turn, you get to move every character before the enemy takes a turn. Certain enemies, every character has their own different attack range, and you can carry a specific number of items per character, sometimes two, other times three, and eventually even like four. And you can equip one item per character too. So you can have multiple weapons on a guy and then choose as long as they're compatible with the weapon, and then use the weapon as best suited, because you'll have basic weapons that will just do their various levels of damage in their various ranges. But then some weapons will have like special perks, like just by equipping the weapon, your defense will go up by two. And a cool thing about this game that it does better than Fire Emblem is one big issue Fire Emblem had was that there were special weapons in that game franchise too. But all the weapons in Fire Emblem break. So once you've done using it, unless you use like a blacksmith item to repair it, it gets broken and it's gone for good. So you might get these cool special weapons, but you'll always be apprehensive about using them. Well, in this game, they do all have limited use. But after a battle, you get it back. So you don't lose your weapons in this game. You just lose them for that battle if you exhaust them, which I actually prefer. That's how it should be, because why would your weapon break on the field? Like, well, I guess this is just gone for good. There's no such thing as repairing gear, whatever. No, just fix the shit. So I like that.
Stab someone with the shards. It's a sword. Like, you could still stab people with it.
And how? If I'm desperate enough, I'm gonna yank. So I like that about this game quite a bit. In addition, during battles, every once in a while you'll find treasure chests on the map, just like you would in a lot of other games like this. You walk over the treasure chest, you stop on it, you'll pick up the loot, and you can harvest it. So it also ends up becoming one of the conditions when you complete a stage, too. Like if you found all the trophies, if you defeated a certain number of targets, how many turns it took you to beat the stage, that kind of thing. Outside of combat, there's various cinema scenarios that you can take on, but of course there's a few special things that take place within that too. So as you play the game, there are multiple factions that open up, usually between like various like families in the country, like, or in the royal family, and also like the civilian faction too. Depending on situations in the story, you might occasionally get a choice in dialogue that will affect the way the conversation or situation is going. And depending on what you choose, you might further in impact the faction that you're a part of. And increasing relationships with the faction will allow you to get better items for purchase from that faction, in addition to occasionally getting more quests from them, which is the other element that factors into faction questing. So the game has normal stages, you know, it progresses as the story progresses, but every once in a while, a faction will present you with a side mission that they'll request you to take on. The idea of just going into a skirmish or, you know, similar conditions to the other game, like fight against this troop or defend this spot for a few number of turns. And other times it might even be like cool, like flashback situation where it's like it talks about stuff that happened already in the game, but you weren't present for. But it's like, this is how it played out. But then you play how it plays out. It's kind of like a nice little cast, like throwback to like history, or not history, but history of the game world. So, and of course, if you take on these missions, the reward can be money, it could be items, and it could also be reputation boosts for the, one of the factions as long as it's associated with it. So there's a lot to take on there. This game is hard. Not hard as in like it's impossible, but...
just sounds complex.
Well, I wouldn't go... Not so much complex. If you play the game like... Again, if you play like Fire Emblem or something, this will come to you like second nature. It's not as complicated as it sounds. It's just hard in the sense that the battles, I like to think, from my experience with the game, they're tightly knit. Like, when you get into a skirmish, it's like, okay, here's this battle. There are the enemies. And here's your group. You always are in potential. You always have a potential of dying. Like, there's no easy battle in this game, to my knowledge, unless you're a freaking military general yourself, in which case, knock yourself out. But I'm pretty sure my memory serves. I died on the second battle of the game, which is embarrassing to admit. But that just goes to show you, I thought the battle was kind of a wash, and it turned out, no, it wasn't. I got my ass beat. So I had to play smart. You got to utilize save files in this game. You can save anytime you want during a battle, so you might want to save when you think you got the upper hand because of reinforcements show up when you don't expect them to, and they rock the floor with you, or you just do a critical attack, and then you miss, which results in people dying. Well, yeah, you'll be glad you made that save file. But the game itself is just a lot of fun. I like the idea, just like in other games like this, how you can get to like a certain level and then promote characters to higher versions of their class, or you can unlock an alternate class to upgrade them to, which has different perks. So it has you choosing what to go along with. I genuinely can't recommend this game enough. Like, if you're into strategy role-playing games, you can't go wrong with this. This is an unexpectedly good title. And I'm surprised that I missed out on it until you were like, hey, you want to review this game? And I'm like, yeah. So it turned out to be a good sell and a good fit. I like this game a lot.
Nice. So $17, your official verdict?
Easy purchase. Buy this bad boy. It's fun.
Cool. I might have to pick this one up. I had my eyes on it. I was waiting to hear what you had to say about it. And I think you just sold me on it.
That's what I like to hear. When my passion burns, I want everyone to feel it.
Well, something's going to be burning. Cities. Cities are going to be burning tonight. Final game to talk about tonight is called The Last Blade Beyond the Destiny, developed and published by SNK Corporation. Released October 28th on the Switch for $7.99. Originally released on the Neo Geo Pocket in 2000, The Last Blade is on Nintendo Switch. The popular weapons-based fighting game The Last Blade is now available in the special edition. Enjoy intense battles, an epic story, mini-games, and more. Chris, tell us about this one.
Okay, well, first off, I want to tell you what the English version of the Japanese name for this game is. Are you ready?
Yes.
Romance of the Bakumatsu Special, Swordsman of the Moonlight, On the Moon a Flower Blooming, a Petal Falling.
Yeah, that name's better than The Last Blade.
It's so good. It's kind of like how one of my favorite NES games, Crystalis, or Crystalis, however you want to pronounce that, in Japan is called God Slayer Sonata of the Faraway Sky.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, that was so good. Anyways, so yeah, that's so what this is. So The Last Blade is a series that started in the late 90s of Neo Geo one-on-one fighters. Big surprise that Neo Geo was making one-on-one fighters in the 90s.
What?
What? Anyways, so there were two games in the main series, at least up to this point, and I'm not sure that they've made any more since. But anyways, around 2000, They decided to make a version to kind of combine the first two games into one, chibify everything, make it 8-bit, and put it on the Neo Geo Pocket. And that's what we have presented to us, brought to us by SNK here, and which, of course, is Neo Geo. But anyways, so it's a one-on-one fighter incorporating characters from both games, and I guess the storylines of both games. Apparently you have to beat all the content of the first game, like by, I guess, beating the game with all the characters, and then you start off with 9 of them, in order to, like, kind of unlock the whole second game's worth of content. So there's a lot of content for this being a small 8-bit game. Basically, it's a kind of weapons-based fighting game, so it's not, like, super... what would you call it? Complex. As you can see, the Neo Geo Pocket only had 2 buttons, so those are your things. One of them basically utilizes your weapon, or in the case of the one guy who does kung fu, you know, his legs. And the other one is kind of like a kick move, which is really good if you can, like, you know, if you can actually contact the enemy with it, then it makes them, like, sail across the, you know, the room, and then you kind of get your bearings, as it were. They all have, like, little combo systems. Some of them have, like, projectiles, like, moves. Like, you can do a Hadouken with most of the characters, and they'll do something fireball-y. Kind of cool, like,
fireball-y.
Something fireball-y. Fireball-esque. Fireball-like. Anyways. With the default character, for sure. It's just like a Hadouken with a sword. But anyways, and, like, the movesets between the characters are all really similar, which is nice. And I should note that among the characters is a little old man with a beard that throws turtles. Nice. And he's the best character, obviously. His weapon is a fishing pole, and, yeah, he largely deals with throwing turtles of various sizes at his foes. So we've got a winner here. And yeah, like any one-on-one fighting game, it basically involves going through and fighting all of the other characters until you get to the end. And, you know, you have the final opponent who has, like, not really a second form, but it takes you to a second, like, backdrop, and, you know, kind of ramps up the intensity and stuff. And all of this serves a story of some kind that I cannot say. I've beaten this game a few times now, but I cannot recall any details of the story. That's one-on-one fighting games for you.
Yeah, that's every fighting game.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really surprised at how smooth the game actually plays, for the fact that it is, like, you know, a handheld, you know, Neo Geo Pocket type of game. Although I understand the system was pretty good. So yeah, it's pretty smooth. It's nice and challenging. It doesn't feel cheap at any point, which is nice. I like when one-on-one fighters don't feel cheap. It's got some really cool quality of life things, of course. It's got a rewind feature, so if you really just, you know, if you really, really want that last smack in the face that, you know, lost you the round to not happen, you can just rewind to before it happens and figure out something else. Has the manual. It has a, it actually has a really interesting, like, filter, you know, a retro filter, because, you know, usually retro filters are like scan lines and junk like that, like stuff you'd want to avoid. This one pixelates the screen in such a way that it looks like it's handheld, and on a TV it looks, it's so extreme, it looks like a cross stitch of a game being played. It's like, I turned that immediately off, of course, but, you know, it actually, I give it points for looking really authentically like old school LCD. And of course you can resize the screen to, you know, actually, you know, go from the top to the bottom. And of course it's a small resolution. So it's going to take up like about the middle 1/3 of a screen. And so they put these layouts on there where you can scroll through different colors of the actual, like, just different JPEGs of, like, Neo Geo pockets. And there's a lot of them. I did not realize how many there were. So that's kind of cool. And there's actually a feature too where, you know, because you have to go to the menu to reset the game, because obviously they didn't have a reset feature in the original game. You just had to turn it off and then back on. So, like, you have a reset thing, and it actually lets you, if you want to, reset it and play the actual original Japanese game too, which is kind of cool.
Nice. With the crazy name and everything?
Well, it's going to be in Japanese, and I can't read Japanese, so I assume so.
Good enough.
But the last thing is that it has... Well, it has a versus play feature, so if you have somebody else with a Switch or, I guess, a second controller, you can play it. Like, it, I can't tell, and I didn't mess with it, so whatever. And there's also, like, a gallery thing where you actually use in-game currency that you earn from wins to, like, purchase endings and stuff. Hmm. And that's endings and other content. And it's important to do that because that's how you unlock secret characters, of which there are a further 5. And there's 2 mini games that you can unlock if you beat the game with the right people. Or no, I'm sorry. The mini games aren't. That's how you unlock other characters, is by, you know, like beating the game with this character, purchasing their 2 endings, and then, you know, etc. And then the game's internal timer, once it passes 2 hours and then 4 hours, you unlock 2 mini games. One of which I know is a home run derby, so that's kind of fun. And yeah, so lots of content for this guy, and lots of really good quality of life stuff. It's not, you know, it's not like Sega Ages level of like extreme on different things that they throw in there, but it's for fans of this game. I think there's a lot here to love. So
nice. $8. Your verdict?
$8. I say it's a buy it. Although I will add in, if you are trying to get into The Last Blade as a series, both the games are already available through Hamster. Last Blade and Last Blade 2 are already, you know, arcade ports of those are available to purchase for the same price. So although this is like a chibi-fied 8-bit scaled down but kind of mushed together version of the 2 games, just note that if you're looking to get into the series, you might try the original.
Nice.
But other than that, it's a buy it.
Cool. Works for me.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Good job, everyone.
The last one. I'm just kidding.
Fire!
As it stands now, Democrats are expected to win the House, Senate is a toss-up, and the election itself is a close fight. So we're all going to shit ourselves in fear tonight.
Oh, boy. And for the whole next week, because...
That's my favorite thing to do. Yeah.
Hooray!
And that's the other thing, you know, everybody, you know, bear in mind that the Electoral College does not vote until December. So there is no winner until the Electoral College picks one. True. I know that sucks, but that's American politics.
Yeah, it sucks.
And so, you know, things will shift a lot here in the next couple weeks. I mean, I've studied every election in U.S. history. I mean, believe it or not, it's actually a real big thing of mine. And
a cool thing, in my opinion, too. I ain't gonna lie.
Oh, thank you. I specifically had designs to write a book about all the candidates who ran and never won. So that was, and I might still, who knows?
If Ross Perot, get him in there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know a lot about Ross Perot. Don't get me started.
Yeah, we don't need more politics talk. We've had enough on the show. Yeah. Big thanks to Scott at Milky Tea Studios for coming on, chatting with us about Hyper Brawl Tournament. Really fun chat, really cool game. Go check that out. It is on all the platforms, I believe, and it is available now. So yeah, Cole, what'd you think of that chat? I never asked you about it.
It was a good time.
We were too busy pretending it was the beginning of the show because I'm a moron.
It was a good time. Lots of sports ball talk that I didn't understand.
Sports ball.
Oh, dear. The one thing worse than politics.
What, our show?
No, sports ball. Duh, this show's great.
I agree. This show is great. Sports ball is okay sometimes with Mario.
Go Steelers.